Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. Well, welcome to Friday. So we have good news. The good news is that I don't have to do a bunch of stuff to open the Skype line. The Skype line of the show is automatically open. Alan Dawson from Belize is already on the line here. But I don't have Jean yet. I'm wondering where Dean is. We'll get her in a little bit. But yeah, so that's really good news. In fact, I'm going to just bring him on right now. We'll chat while I'm doing this. So this is a let's make sure it's working. Unless it's somebody else calling from somewhere else in the world. I just goofed. With any luck, this is Alan Dawson in Belize. Good morning, sir. Hey, Alan.
Hey, Alan. Morning, Greg.
There you are.
Morning, Action Radio.
You'd be worried for a minute there. Okay. Anyway, yeah, so it works. So the good news is you can call in regular time. Yeah, you can call in any time, actually. So our Skype line works, and so that's a good thing. And it looks like we got Jean joining us as well, too. So good morning, Jean. How you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Oh, I'm just ready for a great Friday. This is going to be a whole lot of fun. I was just up until the last minute trying to compile my various websites on both the CMS lawsuit that I just found out about this morning and about the smallpox bioweapon that is contemplated after COVID seems to have run its course. But I'm not going to bother Alan with that. We'll talk about other stuff. So we've moved Alan up earlier to make it easy for him during the time that we have the our daylight savings time has been robbed from us. You know, during these standard time days, which will last until like March. So, Alan, we can talk then about getting you at a different time. But anyway, so we have a busy. Oh, let me, I even forgot my schedule. Where's my schedule? I'm not quite organized. Oh, there it is. Good. Okay, so we're not quite organized. Fridays are going to get really busy around here. I mean, really, really busy. We start off with Alan, then we're going to have. That's actually the old schedule. Shirley Wattrall is going to talk to us about Women and Guns, a deep project and things like that. Friday's turning into like Gun Day. Then we have Derek Park at 7:30, and he'll be here for the financial report. We've got Jim Dykes' Data Clock, Second Amendment report, and then we've got Donnie Chapman with like Gun Tech. So Friday's becoming Gun Day around here. It's really kind of fun. So let's talk about something else before we get there, because we're gonna have our fill of guns as we go through the show this morning. Alan, what's going on in Belize this week? What you got for news? What's hot off the presses, as they say?
All right. Well, first of all, today's a public and bank holiday.
Oh,
It's the day that the country commemorates the arrival of the Garifuna or Garinagus to Belize. Those were the African people that was brought over by the British when they were harvesting mahogany and logwood.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they were brought over from St. Vincent and Jamaica. And so they came here about 1802 on the 19th day of November. So, yeah, the country is celebrating that day today, so.
So we're talking slavery, right? So these folks were brought over slaves, right?
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay. That's now, right. 1802, in the grand scheme of things, that's kind of late in the slave trade, as disgusting and horrible as it is. I mean, we had slaves in this country, I think, as early as the 1600s, before we were a country. We had slaves.
Right.
You know, and I think Brazil was one of the biggest countries for slaves. I think they had them earlier than we did. I think a lot earlier. If I remember, but Brazil has huge amounts of slaves.
Sure,
and also the Caribbean, right? Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
So what they do, they do a lot of, they would usually have like big festivities, right? Would first of all reenact the arrival when they came in those little dugout canoes. So they have a bunch of them go out and they come in and then they'll have drummers at the coast awaiting the arrival, and they have these canoes with like banana trees on them and many different types of decoration, their cultural attire, and they're singing and cheering and jeering and all that stuff. But because of the COVID thingy, well, you know, that's has been downsized, and so they have to do it a little differently. And of course, most of it you got to view virtually now. You don't have an actual event that you could go to. But yesterday, which was interesting, around Belize City, they had two locations on the city tour that we do with the Calypso Train. So the tourists were able to view the drumming happening live, the dancing, you know, with just small groups. So that was interesting.
Well, I think things are loosening up worldwide, and rightly so, because, well, you know, I just, you don't have to get political, but when we talk about things on the, we talk about COVID on the show here, you know, I point to three occasions when it would have died out, and our own, you know, I call them Dr. Fauci, our own government brought it back. And they brought it back in July of 2020 when naturally it would have gone away. Immunity was building up. People were doing fine. The death rate was headed for zero. You know, it was probably never going to get there because, you know, once this thing is established, there are always people who are going to be vulnerable, but there's a very small percentage. And then with all the lockdowns and masks that came back, and then, of course, then we started to get immune again, and that was late in the fall of 2020. And then they brought the vaccines in, which we believe created the Delta variant, which again kicked it back up again. And then it started to come down again earlier this year in 2021. And then they started the mandates, which, of course, brought it back up again. You know, so, and like I said, mm-hmm. that's just my theory. That's what we talked about on the show here. But it seems to me, I don't know if you see, and you may not even want to comment on that, but it seems to me that most of this after July of 2020 was artificial, was kind of brought about. So I'm really glad, this is something you can comment on. I'm really glad that places around the world are coming down in COVID numbers, which is good, that they're loosening up, that they're not doing the same mask and lockdowns and all that other crazy stuff, and hopefully they'll stop mandating the damn vaccine. Because there's reports, I think, again, you don't have to comment. You just got to sit there and listen to me for it. We'll talk food in a minute. I'm waiting for Pianki to call in and get the food menu for this week. But the thing is, there are countries over in Europe. I think Gibraltar is the most vaccinated country in the world. And they have so many cases of COVID, they had to call off Christmas. You know, they've locked down completely. There are other places in Europe, the more vaccinated they are, the more COVID cases they have, and the more they're heading back to lockdown. So doing exactly the wrong thing. And so I don't know if you've noticed a pattern in this, but if you can, you know, advise your own government from us, you know, at Action Radio and all the sources that are out there, if you look at the countries in the world, the more restrictive, the more vaccinations, the more lockdowns, the higher their COVID cases. That can't be an accident. That's all I'm saying. Is that it might be worth taking a look at. Yeah. You don't think so?
I don't think it's an accident, no.
But you don't think that? I see what you're saying.
Interesting on your, on your news, I've been noticing your numbers are going up again.
Where are they going up again? Because they're not going up in Florida. They're not going up in Texas.
I think they register about over 18 states. I think they're seeing an increase again. Hospitals are getting busy again, and that's getting scary.
Well, you know, I saw a meme recently that said that was talking about hospitals. They don't want to take, quote, the unvaccinated. Well, if they're not taking the unvaccinated, then who the hell's filling up the hospitals? It's got to be the vaccinated.
I know.
So, yeah. Yeah. It's interesting the way this is working. Well, I'll bet you'll find if you look at the states that are the most locked down, they generally have the most COVID cases. Gene, let's get Gene to help us out here on this a little bit. Do you have any way you can look up any stats on that? We can help Alan out here. As far as the most locked down, the most vaccinated states, the ones that have the most COVID cases. See if we can get Gene. She's probably working on something. Now I'll get her back in a bit.
Gene's probably getting her coffee still.
Well, that could be too. Yeah, I mean, this is early. You know, 6 in the morning here.
I will check. Yeah, I will check. The thing is here, which gets me, is that Pfizer's asking the FDA to not put out any vaccine from Pfizer, or the FDA that's asking that Pfizer not have to put out any information about the vac till the year 2076
So right there. Yeah, they want 55 years of anonymity. They don't want to tell you what's in the vaccine. They don't want to tell you anything about it. And Pfizer's the worst of the bunch.
Wow.
The reason that Pfizer's the most prominent is because they have the biggest lobbying budget. They do the biggest arm twisting. They go to countries all over the world and basically bully them into accepting the Pfizer vaccine. But the problem is the statistics on the Pfizer vaccine are terrible. You know, you're talking myocarditis, which is swelling of the heart in young people, especially young men. That is a death rate of like 80% within 5 years. You know, this is a horrible thing that's going on with this. So this is why I'm so worried about you and anybody else that has a vaccine and just these mandates in general, because we're finding we've got a new lawsuit now against our own central Medicaid services department of the government, which is mandating that 17 million health workers across America get a vaccine simply because they are they take money from Medicaid and Medicare, our government health payments. So the countries that have socialized medicine, they could require everybody in the health professions to do it. In fact, they probably are. But if you look at, I was listening to a recording yesterday. Dr. David Martin was talking about this is not a vaccine; it's a bioweapon. So it's a there are people that are really, really strongly, and I'm with them, by the way, strongly against this, and that it's not a vaccine, it never has been. It's at best a messenger RNA gene altering therapy. And so there's so many things going on with it. Like I say, I just pray that you guys don't get bullied by Pfizer, and that the government really takes a hard look at the countries that are the most vaccinated, because they're the ones that are having the most problems. Israel is having huge problems right now, because of this. Like I say, Gibraltar is the worst. And the countries that didn't lock down and didn't mandate vaccines, like Sweden, for example, is doing a whole lot better. And some of the states in this country that have not had the requirements. So like I said, this is no accident. These are the trends. Anyway, on that happy note. Yeah. What do you think?
It's interesting. In the past, remember your government, they did not allow the use of the AstraZeneca in the U.S., right? But yet they were sending it out to other countries. Why were they sending it out to the other country and they weren't accepting it in the U.S. for use with their people?
And I don't think it's made here. I think it's made in Europe. I believe AstraZeneca is made in Europe. Gene, go ahead. See if Gene can check on that real quick. So, and actually that makes sense because Pfizer, seems to be winning the vaccine wars, as I call them. In other words, who's going to get the most? You don't hear about Moderna anymore. Moderna was huge. In fact, the National Institute for Health, our government health, grant writers basically that dish out taxpayer money to their friends in Ivy League colleges so they can, whip up this stuff, at taxpayer expense and then give it to corporations at taxpayer expense. And then the companies can make it at taxpayer expense and, sell it for their own profit, which then gets kicked back through license fees and royalties back to the universities and then back to the NIH, back to the grant writers. It's a fascinating money thing. We're going to start looking at the money. And I might be curious to see, like I say, countries around the world, how the money train works. But the NIH, the National Institute for Health, and Moderna are in court right now wrestling over who gets the license fees. Because the National Institute for Health, a government department, is saying, we want the profit too. We're entitled to half the profits from this thing because we helped design it. Think about that for a second. Government engaging in the private industry that's supposed to be regulated. I got the article. You look it up yourself. Moderna and the National Institute for Health are in court right now fighting over money. What does that tell you?
It's all about business.
Yeah.
So we never had Pfizer down here.
Go ahead, Ellen and Jane. Yeah. Jane, you want to go ahead? Then we'll get to Ellen.
Oh, sorry. I don't know if you heard, but AstraZeneca is made in the UK.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering.
I haven't looked up the highest number with COVID cases yet, but the thing is, too, they said that when it gets colder out, those states should see an increase in COVID patients. So it'll be interesting to see if that's true or not.
Wait a minute. They said they'd see more incidents in the summer, too. Well, are they just picking a season? Are they just announcing it every time? Well, springtime, more COVID cases. Fall's coming up. It's probably more COVID cases.
And I listened to something last night where they said now the vaccines are only good for 2 months. Two.
Oh, really? Where'd you hear that?
On my talk show I listen to every night.
Okay, yeah. Alan, you want to check into that too. So we're going to give you all kinds of stuff. It's going to mess you up. We're going to give you all this information. And I was like, I was so happy before.
Hey, don't mess me up, man. Please don't mess me up, Greg.
It's a beautiful little tropical paradise. Well, when you've heard enough, just let me know. But that's we've done articles on that too. That I found them. The ones that like Natural News, the source I can't publish, on Facebook because it gets immediately banned. Yeah, this thing has diminishing return. So the good news is that the effect of it gets progressively less. That's why they keep pushing the boosters and all the other stuff. But so the bad news is once that stuff's in your system, you need to get on your quercetin and vitamin D3 and vitamin C and zinc and lessen the effects as much as possible. Those things prevent COVID anyway, which is kind of ironic that you couldn't take a nutritional supplement and say, well, this is my vaccine. That's what we do here. That's my vaccine. I'm fully vaccinated. That's my vaccine. What's the difference if it works? Anyway.
You know what?
Yeah,
okay. Sorry, I got you. I got the information for North Dakota per 100,000 has the most. Alaska, Tennessee, Wyoming, South Dakota, Utah, South Carolina, Rhode Island.
Those are states with the most COVID cases, right?
Arkansas, Florida, Kentucky, Alabama, Mississippi. Yeah.
Wait, Florida?
Yeah, Florida's in the higher numbers. But you got to understand, too, Florida gets a lot of vacationers there. So it's like that could be the reason, too. But, yeah, let me see the – but then you have to wonder if this is true, too.
North Dakota's only got like 12 people in it. How does North Dakota have such a high – nobody comes in contact with each other in North Dakota. It's wide open spaces, big – oh, I think Montana's a big sky country. It's cold up there.
But
nobody's there.
Puerto Rico's involved in this, and that's got the lowest number, then Hawaii, then Vermont, Maine, Oregon, District of Columbia, Maryland, Washington, and New Hampshire, Virginia.
Something's wrong. Something's wrong in this, because they're saying the liberal states have the fewest cases and the conservative states have the most cases.
Let me see if I can find another one.
Yeah, there's something really wrong with that study. And that's the problem, Alan, is getting good information. And this is why I'm hoping that, Belize government, Belize tourism, you guys get the best information you can, because there's a lot of false stuff out there. Yeah. So where does your, well, I don't know. Go ahead. What are you going to say?
No, I was going to say that when we first got our first vaccine, it was only the AstraZeneca that was being issued here. And then later we got the Sinopharm, I think, from China. That's the second one came into the country, but it was only recently now that we heard that Pfizer is here, and I think Johnson. Yeah, they're here.
Johnson.
But most of the vaccinated people, they were with AstraZeneca. That's the one I got.
Interesting. Well, I would look into ways to lessen the effect of it. Any kind of nutritional, any kind of anything you can take. And, of course, if you, possible, don't get another one. Just stop doing it. The sooner the better. And check the English.
I will not do the booster. I will not do any booster. They are talking about boosters now.
Is that required,
right now,
or is that
just a certain age group? No, it's just for a certain age group for right now.
Okay. Well,
not
again,
required,
the
fewer.
Go ahead, Alan.
It may get to the point that it will be required for people in the tourism industry too. It may be. So for now,
you just need a lobby.
I don't want it, but eventually I might just push that thing in me again. Greg, prior to these vaccines, I would take, this is for the last 12 years, I've been taking, have you heard of a herb called Echinacea?
Yes, I have.
Golden seal root? Okay. I've been taking that for over 12 years. That's an immune system support, right? System builder. Since I've been taking Echinacea with golden seal root, and I complement it with vitamin C. I drink like a bottle every 6 months. Then I miss 6 months, and I take it every 6 months, And I've never gotten the flu since. Never gotten the flu since then. Prior to that, I would get two flu a year. But no flu since I've been taking Echinacea with golden seal root, and I complement it with the vitamin C.
See, now that's perfect. Exactly what we talk about here. In fact, we're going to be doing more and more with the natural herbs and things that are out there, because that's where all medicine comes from anyway. I mean, most of the drugs that you have here are like hydroxychloroquine is basically a derivative, a chemically produced quercetin. Quercetin comes from whatever the quercetin plant is. That's what I take. It's non-prescription hydroxychloroquine, as a preventive, against getting COVID from the people who have received the shot, because, you're shedding spike protein. And so you're actually, it's creating the Delta variant. It's creating all kinds of problems to actually spread COVID. The very thing that that people are taking allegedly to stop it, are doing it. So Echinacea is great. I think the only thing I've heard is you have to be a little careful because, sometimes it's better when you're sick as opposed to, or like I say, you don't take it all the time. So if you take it all the time, it loses its effect. But Echinacea is really powerful. Another one, elderberry.
Yeah.
Elderberry is really good for preventing viruses like COVID.
I heard about that.
I have my elderberry zinc lozenges, and so those kind of things work too. But and why can't we call these things vaccines? Why can't we call these, cures and treatments? Because they are.
They're natural.
Do you have a flu shot requirement or no, where you are?
There are flu shots here.
But
it's
not required.
Not required. People usually do it voluntarily. But I have never had a flu shot in my life, Greg. Never.
Yeah, interesting. So, and see, here's the problem we have too, and this is why it's interesting comparing, you know, Belize, the United States, UK, and different places, is that most people, if given the choice, would not take this. Most people, if given the flu shot choice, wouldn't take it. A lot of health professionals, you know, like Jim, was required to at some point. But the fact that they have to require it should tell you that there's something to question here, because if it was such a good thing, you wouldn't have to require it. You know, people would do it anyway. It's like, well, it's a good thing to do. It's like, okay, fine.
Of course.
You know, and that's the difference. You know, something mandated generally isn't going to be good for you, because if it was good for you, it wouldn't have to be mandated. Jean had some more facts and figures for us. What else you come up with?
Yeah, I do. It says, as of November 18th, CDC and prevention reports, California has over 5 million cases, Texas with 4, Florida with over 3, Illinois, Georgia, Ohio, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, North Carolina, Michigan, Tennessee, and Arizona, Indiana over 1. And then you got Minnesota and Michigan have the highest per capita per day average.
Well, are they testing more? And, you know, and here's the thing too about cases. You know, how many cases of the cold are out there right now? How many cases of flu are out there? You know, how many cases of obesity are out there? I mean, a case is not, you know, Alan's laughing already. The reason I bring this up is because when they started measuring COVID, the first metric was death. You know, in other words, how many people were killed by this thing? And the deaths started at the end of January, beginning of February 2020. They peaked April 15th. So I'm running, it's kind of tax day. And then they started down again. I've still got the CDC charts to prove it. You can't find them anymore on the CDC website. That's why I screenshot them. But COVID was heading for zero as of July 4th. There was like 300 deaths, you know, nationwide July 4th. Now, no more would have come in after the death certificates. But the point was, the trend after April 15th was about a 45-degree angle for zero. It never changed from that until they changed how they measured the numbers, because they had to bring it back to bring in the lockdowns to sell vaccines. Because if COVID disappeared in July of 2020, there would be no vaccine sales, because they didn't come out till December. Okay. And so you look at the information, and then they switch to cases. Well, a case doesn't mean anything, you know, because most people, I mean, everybody gets exposed to COVID. So the cases in the United States would probably be about 300 million, not counting the people who were sheltered, you know, because they're extremely vulnerable. But if you take, you know, if you take cases, I'll bet you, you know, everybody has been exposed to this in the country probably several times. At some point, you've breathed in COVID, you know, air. and for the vast majority, nothing happens. So if you actually wanted to measure cases, there's probably 300 million cases in the United States. It's almost everybody. But the amount of people that got sick is very few. So cases aren't a good measure. That's what I'm saying. Gene, what do you think? You're a resident health professional.
It makes sense. It does make sense. Yeah.
Yeah. So, Alan,
yeah,
is that
you
what
know, I really think there's so much we don't know that happened. And, yeah, I think Fauci's name is on it.
Oh, do you have a – speaking of which, do you have a Dr. Fascist in your health department? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Alan.
Yeah. Yeah, of course we do. It's interesting, our government was changed around the same time like yours, right? In November, we had an election last year.
Right.
They actually just had 1 year in office. And whenever they changed government, those people like Dr. Fauci, he would get changed too. So there was a big issue because he had a contract with the medical department, and then they just threw him out because the government changed. I don't want to say a tradition that whenever a group of people work with this government and then the government changes after 5 years, then that group of worker will automatically, they'll all be fired and retrenched, and then they get their own people, their own workers, their own family, their own friends. Is that how it works there in the States or no?
No, it's actually kind of different. See, if you bring in your own family, it's called nepotism.
Okay.
It's actually supposed to be illegal. So in other words, you know, you look at Trump, he had a bunch of his family in, but as the president, they can select who they want. So in most businesses, what they call civil service positions, in other words, you know, nonpartisan, non-political appointees, they're supposed to go through a civil service system, and you're not supposed to be able to hire your cousins, you know, your kids, because that another that would that blocks the equal access of other people to get a government job. So they don't do that. Well, they do, but they just they hide it. You know, so there are ways to do it. But what I find interesting, see, this is the big problem that Trump had. I don't know if you guys, you know, how close you're watching the Trump administration. Trump's biggest problem was not firing the previous people. He had a bunch of Obama people that sabotaged everything he did. So in Belize, though, it's interesting that now he could have had fired a bunch of folks. In fact, you look at Obama, you know, fired all the Bush people. I mean, all the Bush people. You know, Clinton, when he came into office, fired all the U.S. attorneys. He got rid of everybody in the Justice Department that might have had loyalty to anybody but him and his corrupt administration. You know, so unless he had something on you that were, like, bribable, you know, he didn't want you in the Clinton administration. Well, that's not absolute, but I'm just saying that, you know, you look at the way they operate, the different ways of doing it. So in the Belize government, you know, I mean, your Dr. Fascist would be your head of the public health department. Are they a decent person, or do they like power, mandates, control, and are they a nerdy little short guy like our Dr. Fascist?
You know what? The first guy was a little short guy. He was smart. He was smart. This guy was a smart guy.
Okay.
You know, it's a pity they got rid of him, because he was like right on top of things. But anyway, he ended up he got the COVID too last year. He had it. He had a bad experience. You know.
Hold on. Your own health expert would have known that ivermectin or hydroxychloroquine plus zinc plus vitamin D3 and vitamin C cures COVID. I mean, that's the early treatment. And also they have other people like doxycycline, monoclonal antibodies, and some other things. But if you've got a health professional, you know, running the health department in Belize, they had to know the cures. Didn't they?
You would have think, right?
So how do you have a bad experience?
Say it again.
Well, how did the head of your health department have a bad experience, you know, assuming that they're smart enough to know? I mean, they read the Dr. Zelenko reports. They read, you know, Judy Mikovits. They read Dr. David Martin and Ryan Cole and Ben Marble and all the folks that we have here. And most of these people I know now through the radio show. You know, so, I mean, the information's out there. Go ahead.
I don't understand. I just don't understand. My son had the COVID. He's out in Los Angeles right now. He lives out there now. He had it back in 2020, like the mid part of last year. And I just told him, hey, I personally took him some hot ginger tea. I told him to drink only hot, nothing cold. And he's asthmatic. And I told him, I said, remember what we used to do? Mom and I used to do, we used to fix up your chest, fix up your lung, and you just, you know, take a warm bath. And you do a steam bath, and then that opens up your lung, and, you know, you start breathing better.
Yeah, breaks
clears
up the
mucus
and
all that stuff. Yeah. And he said one night he went to sleep, and he said, I thought this would be I'd be dead. I won't wake up tomorrow. And he said when he woke up the next day, he goes, wow, I made it. I'm alive. Yeah, but it's just natural stuff. I told him just, you know, do the stuff that we did when you were a baby with asthma.
You know, the natural stuff works. And there's such a prejudice against natural remedies. Like I say, I'm looking for a really good person to be able to tell us about all these things, like echinacea, like elderberry, like zinc, you know, like just minerals, herbs, you know, teas, different teas out there. There's so many things. Chinese medicine is particularly good at this. You know, and it was interesting living in San Francisco. And part of the fun of San Francisco was going to, in fact, I knew a Chinese pharmacy because I was a tour guide. And so I talked to a guy, gave me some tea from Hong Kong. I forgot to drink it. It went bad after a while. But point being that you go to a Chinese pharmacy in San Francisco, and their drawers full of herbs, you know, ginseng. They don't have bottles. You go to Chinese pharmacy, they don't have bottles. They don't have bottles of drugs on the wall. They have drawers full of herbs. So it's interesting that like a Chinese doctor practicing in the United States is going to have to, you know, have either a couple of different licenses or mix them both. Because if you take both of them, Western medicine is really good for like broken bones and, you know, when I had open heart surgery to repair a valve, they're good at the mechanics. Western medicine is really good at the mechanics, and I have faith in that. But they're stupid about the drugs because there's so much profit motive involved in it. Well, in Belize, do you have a large community? They call them alternative health, I think. But do you have a lot of health practitioners that use, you know, herbs and natural medicines and things like that? Can you go to a place, or is it more online?
Yeah.
All right. Interesting.
Yeah, we have a bunch of them. Those are the ones that I go to.
Okay. Well, bring someone on the show. If you want to invite someone to call in, if they've got a Skype line, or drag them to your place out on the front porch there, make some ginger tea. And I'm serious. I want to get more of your fellow Belizeans on the show, because this is a great cultural exchange for us. I mean, I think it's fascinating being able to talk about this stuff, you know, and hopefully I'll encourage more and more people in different countries to be able to call in so we can exchange these views. Jean, do you have something for us?
Yeah.
I was just going to say, I think the reason in this country, those type of things are like more hush-hush, are not believed to be true, is because the medical association is so strong. And why would you want to push natural things when it's like, ooh, a synthetic thing that has umpteen more side effects can be given to a person.
Mm-hmm.
So it has a lot to do with schooling and what they're taught. You know, they're taught to frown upon the natural stuff, which I think is very sad, because I think you're right. I think a combination of the two is good.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's in the culture too in Belize, isn't it? That you know, you grow up with natural remedies. You grow up with, you know, ginger tea, things like that, right? So is that still pretty much culture-wide in Belize? Okay, yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I grew up drinking lemongrass tea for, you know, with breakfast.
Mm-hmm.
They would do us the lemongrass and sweeten that with condensed milk. Man, what's better than a great cup of lemongrass tea for breakfast with your breakfast?
I don't know. I've never had lemongrass tea. So this is where we need to come down. So as soon as you guys, like I said, you lift your you know, your vaccine mandate, I'm looking at – I got a bunch of people that want to come down, by the way. And they're not all Action Radio reporters. I mean, just friends. Everybody wants to come to Belize. So we might have a rather large gathering down there, which would be kind of fun. So I'll let you know ahead of time. You know, we'll get it organized.
Sure.
You know who I'd like to have organized is Shelby. Because I think she'd love to do it.
Oh my goodness, she's a great organizer.
Well, no kidding. I mean, she's always the best. So that's why I'll be talking to her about that when it comes to actually putting this together. Our next big project is to go to CPAC, and that's going to be in February. So we're going to have a big political. There's a huge political convention in Orlando, Florida. So I can just, you know, pack up the car and go. So that's going to be a whole lot of fun. I'm interested in your celebration, though. Do you? In Belize, you know, when you're celebrating, it's interesting, you celebrate the beginning of slavery to the end of slavery. You know, in other words, you celebrate the day that it started and of course, you know, celebrate the fact that it ended, which is great. Do you have the same kind of use of racism that we have in the United States, where people are always being charged here, especially as white guys? You know, it's like we're the oppressors. There's white supremacy. There's, you know, and it's all, there's so much, you know, our left, our political left is so much concerned with racism. In Belize, though, you've got a really, I mean, truly a multicultural society. You've got different, you know, different groups, different races. You've got indigenous folks. You've got folks that were former slaves. You've got, you know, all kinds of people. Do you even have a white population there? I'm just curious. I mean, you know, like British, you know, citizens who have come down to Belize.
Yeah,
it's small.
White population is small, yeah. But I tell you what, for the most part, we don't have that prejudice issue. We don't have the type of prejudice you guys suffer there in the U.S. still. I like to point out to my guests that, I mean, you can see 4, 5, 6 different culture people, ethnic groups standing on the side there talking, laughing, having a good time. And that's just the nature of the people in Belize, you know. We don't suffer too much issue with prejudice. So when you find prejudice, is like some people coming in from Guatemala, Salvador, you know, and then they come and they set up a little business or they get a land, and then the local people say, hey, look, we had them Spanish people come from across the border getting lands, and we want land and we can't get land. Then you get a little bit of prejudice.
Oh, see, that's really interesting.
You know? But
that's fascinating. Yeah. Okay. Do you have an illegal alien situation where you have Guatemalans and Hondurans racing into Belize?
You know, we it's always an issue that those people coming here. You remember they had the Civil War back in the 80s? I think it was the 80s.
Which
well, in the 80s,
who was it?
They had Civil War in like Salvador, Nicaragua, Honduras, and those places.
Okay.
So a lot of them came into Belize as refugees.
Right.
Yeah, so that's why we have such a multiracial, multi-ethnic group of people that makes up our population. But people from those countries, they always try to get into Belize because of better living conditions, small population. Belize is rich, you know. El Salvador is a little smaller than Belize, but they've got like 6.5 million people. You know that, right?
No, I didn't know how many. No, this is why I'm hoping you'll help us, you know, learn about the countries, not just Belize, but around Belize, you know, the Caribbean islands, Mexico, you know, the countries surrounding you, Guatemala, Honduras, Nicaragua, Costa Rica, which is probably closer to Belize in terms of economy and I don't know. You tell me. But I mean, I want to learn about that part of the world, and the best way to do that is to talk to somebody who's there. You.
So I was just reading a news about El Salvador, and and El Salvador, they don't use their own currency anymore. They're using U.S. money.
Okay.
I don't know if you're familiar with that.
No, I didn't know that, but that's a mistake, I think, because our dollar is being devalued so heavily, and we've got so much inflation here. What's that doing to the El Salvadorian economy? Or your economy, for that matter?
Nothing so far. But I do know that countries that has to revert to using U.S. currency, it means that they have been in big debts with the U.S., right? Is that how that works?
I'm not sure. That's a really good question. You know what you might want to do?
Yeah.
I'll ask Derek Park.
Right?
You know, where was the research? In fact, I had an oil question from last week, but that's okay. See, now Derek, who comes on at 7:30, so he'll be on in about an hour. About 55 minutes. And you can listen to the podcast, or you can even call back in if you want. You know, you're welcome to call, you know, whenever you feel like it, especially this time, but it's always good to hear from you. So he does our economic report. That'd be a really great question to ask him. I don't know how versed he is in foreign currencies, but he's a financial advisor here. Now, he can't give financial advice. He can't tell you stocks and things to buy and things like that. That's not why he's on the show. But he does give the Edward Jones financial report, and then we get the numbers, and then we go to, you know, discussions of inflation, of currency. And we haven't really talked about foreign currency or the United States as a currency in other countries. That'd be fascinating. You should come on that. In fact, if you want to call back today, if you have time, feel free. If you don't, then we'll just, you know, I can schedule it sometime. Or just listen to the podcast. I'll ask him myself, and you can listen to the podcast, you know, at your leisure. You know, but it's on about midway through the show. We talk guns again.
Okay.
It's really fun.
You are on usually, Greg, until 9, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah, 3 hours.
9 o'clock.
Yeah. Okay. We've extended our time by 3 hours because we had so much to cover. I have so many new reporters. There's so many things happening here.
Yeah.
I'm going to tell you too, and Gene already knows this, but we have a brand new writeyourloss.com website, which is about to come out. And it looks fabulous. And so we're getting ready for the big time here. This show is going to explode as soon as we get that Johnny Carson introduction, where you get some really big person to say, "Hey, I found a place that actually writes legislation that is on the cutting edge of freedom, that you know, is doing things no one else ever thought of." That's our moment. That's, you know, we get that intro, and this show takes a huge quantum leap, and you know, but we have to be ready for that. So that's what I'm working on now. Anyway, our currency. The biggest problem is, in fact, there was a marathon debate in Congress last night with McCarthy. I forgot, Kevin McCarthy, who's the minority leader. I hope he doesn't become speaker because I don't trust him. He's saying all the right things right now, but I still don't trust him. But anyway, they're trying to spend another couple of $1 trillion. That's with a T, $1 trillion on these stupid, wasteful programs. And that's what's causing inflation, because they have to borrow money to pay for all these programs. Well, there isn't any money to borrow because we have a national debt, so they have to print money to borrow. And as they print money and put that money in circulation, every extra dollar makes all the other dollars worth a little bit less. And so if you print $1 trillion, you know, that's like a trillion extra pieces of pizza, you know, but without making the pizza bigger. So you're slicing smaller pieces of pizza of the same size pie without making the pie bigger. Well, that doesn't do anything except you know, you get more pieces, but you get each piece smaller. That's what inflation is. And so I'm wondering if these currencies, these nations like El Salvador, well, here's a plan I had. Let me run something by you that I thought of before. We have, I think, one of the biggest problems with our illegal alien problem is we've got people come here because they don't have opportunities in their own country, or they just want free stuff. The people that just want free stuff, they're going to be a problem no matter where they go. But the people that are coming here to work, rather, instead of waiting their turn and coming here legally, you know, I would think if we had a better economic situation in these different countries. You know, we never hear about, you know, a caravan starting from Belize. Nobody's packing, you know, we don't see like 5,000 people packing up, you know, throwing their backpacks on and getting a bunch of funding from the national. No one's leaving Belize. Okay. So let's go with that. I'll tell you my other theory in a bit. So what are you guys doing right that nobody wants to leave? What's going on there that's good? I mean, you said it basically, but I'm just curious. Nobody wants to leave Belize. It sounds like you don't have people flowing out of your country. You don't have a brain drain. What's that? Go ahead.
I want to leave, but I don't want to leave?
Have
a visa. I need to get a visa first.
Where do you want to go? Are you talking as a tourist or to
kidding,
move?
Rick.
You're not going to move.
I don't want to leave. I just want to go for my usual vacation. I mean, my last vacation in the U.S. was 2016. But, you know, I was just sitting back and watching this COVID situation, you know, and just hoping that it would go down. And I just needed to get a break, you know, change the environment, change the scene, you know. And I'm hoping to apply for my visa again next month. And
is that a visa to leave Belize or to come to the United States? Because I don't think I have to have a visa. I didn't have a visa when I went. What's that now?
You don't need a visa to come to Belize, but I need to get a tourist visa, a visitor's visa to go to the U.S. It's called a B-1, B-2.
Why do you need that?
It's been like that forever. I got my very first visa when I was like 18 years old. It was free, but now they put a price on it. Now it's we have to pay $320 just for the application.
What?
If they give you the visa, it's okay. If you don't get the visa, that's it. Your $320 is a process fee. But I've never had a problem getting a visa. But Belizeans are applying because I had a friend that applied back in October.
Mm-hmm.
And she said that her date for the interview is going to be in this month. No, she applied in September. So it means there's a big group of people that's applying right now. And so you got to wait your turn. And then they're not doing too much of the in-person interviews like they're used to since
just
the COVID
for a visa?
Situation. So let's say your visa expires within the last 12 months or 24 months, I think it is. You don't need to go in for an interview. You just would send your passport, and then they'll stamp in your visa and send it back to you. You have somebody pick it up, or you go and pick it up and drop. But you don't need to do an interview. Mine has been expired since 2018 May, so I need to go in for an actual interview now.
What are they interviewing you for to get a visa? To make sure you're coming back, you're not leaving the country? What are they looking for?
They'll ask you some questions, you know, like, what's your reason for wanting to go to the U.S. right now? Who are you going to be staying with? Who's going to take care of your trip? How long are you going to be there? What do you have hold you in Belize? Do you have a bank account number? Blah, 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 blah. You know, it depends who's there.
Why do they want to know that stuff?
I'm
curious now. Why do they need to?
It's just their process. It's just their process. Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's
you know.
Excuse me, but that's not good enough for me. I'm not nothing against you, but I'm just saying.
I know,
you know where my thought goes, right? My thought immediately goes, and you probably don't want to do this because you're in the tourist business, but this is where Action Radio would come in and say, wait a minute. You know, you're asking all these questions. You know, you're charging people $320. You know, you're pocketing all that money. It's you know, it's part of their budget, part of their supplement. It's like when our law enforcement used to use asset forfeiture. It's like, well, we think your house is used in a crime. We're going to take your house, sell your house, keep the money, you know, buy whatever widgets with it for the police department. And they were doing that. I mean, it's exploitation. This to me is exploitation. It's cost $320. $320 for a visa just to leave the country? What
it's
something wrong
dollars,
here.
Though, so you cut that in half. Cut that in half, and that's what it is in the U.S. money. But it's $320 Belize dollars.
Yeah, that's still 160 American dollars just for permission to leave your own country. you know why they do it?
Yeah.
They figure the people who leave are rich, and they can take them for some money. You
they
have to pay to get back in, or no?
No.
I'm just teasing you. Yeah, this is, to me, now what I would do as an activist radio host, I would be calling the Belize Tourist Bureau. I'm not going to do it. I mean, I'm not going to, you know, get you in trouble with anybody else. But if I were there, you know, as broadcasting, I'd be saying to, you know, the Belize folks, to say, hey, guys, you know, why do you make it hard for your folks to leave? Culture is good, you know, because they're going to go there. They're going to meet people who are going to want to come to Belize. It's actually a benefit to the country to have people go visit other countries because they'll talk about Belize and more people will come visit. I think to me they're being penny wise and pound foolish. Yeah, they're getting a short term gain of $300, but every tourist that comes in is going to spend more than that. You know, a lot more. They're going to spend that much a day on a hotel.
Oh yeah,
you know, and so especially in terms of $160 American, yeah. Well, how much are your hotels going for? What's a hotel, standard hotel? Nice place, Belize. How much am I going to pay?
In Belize, probably you can get a nice one for like $60 US, $75
okay,
US.
Oh, hell, that's a Motel 6 here. That's a great rate. So $60. Okay. So it's $160.
You go to
you're
Radisson,
about,
you're talking about $100 US, right? $150 US, Radisson, Ramada.
Yeah, for a typical, well, about $100 right now for, you know, in the cities is probably closer to $200 a night for a standard U.S. hotel.
Okay.
I mean, I'm just guessing. But the point is that, you know, you're no, I don't understand this short-term, this short-sighted government stuff because they're really, I don't know if they're trying to stop people from leaving, trying to make it more difficult. They're just trying to make money because people who travel generally have more money than those that don't. That's just a weird policy to me. Huh. Gene, what do you think? Let's just bring Gene into the conversation.
A lot of people are going to visit family this time around, usually, you know, in the end of the year time.
Yeah.
And so I believe
so
that's
everybody,
right now.
And everybody needs a visa in the family, right? So if you have a family of four going to visit, you know, your extended family in Wyoming, well, no, you're not going to be there. It's too cold. But, you know, wherever you're going to go visit, does everybody have to pay this fee or is one visa per family?
No, every single application pays $160 US. Every application.
Even five-year-old kids? Five-year-old kids need a visa?
No, they will go on the parents' visa, yeah.
Okay, so, all right, so at least it's
they'll
only
go on
adults.
They have the same application. Just the infants who go on the same application. Yeah.
This is a racket. This is a government racket. This is extortion. This is what I think. Gene, what do you think?
But I'm wondering, too, if it's not more so based on the U.S. side where they're keeping track of people. You know, they don't want people to – well, I don't know. I was going to say they want people to be here on a visa but not stay. But then we're looking at Biden, so that would be wrong.
No, I don't think –
it's interesting that you have to have a visa, you know, that you have to do that just to come into the States. Yeah. But I guess every country, you know, is that mandatory? Well, it isn't. I don't know. Doesn't make any sense.
Well, is it to leave Belize that you need a visa, or is it specifically to come to the United States?
Ellen? No, to enter the United States. It's to enter the United States you need that visa.
So that don't make any sense. Why are they allowing illegals, not even caring who they are, but yet people that come here legally, you know, for a vacation or whatever, it's messed up.
Well, that's why legal immigration is so difficult. And yet illegal aliens are walking in right now. That makes no sense at all.
Yeah. Is that something?
Well, more than that, but yeah, I know what you mean, yeah. But it's nice that you don't have that problem. But it's interesting that considering the wealth of Belize compared to, you know, the average Guatemalan or Honduran, which is right on your border, right? Belize borders. What is Belize border? Guatemala, Honduras, and Mexico?
No, Honduras doesn't border us. We have Guatemala in the west and the south. And then Mexico is in north.
So Guatemala, Mexico.
So if you go like to the end of Belize in the south, and you go like a three hours boat ride, like southeast, then you're in Honduras territory.
Oh, so that's further south. Okay. So my question is, why aren't people, you know, these caravans from Honduras and Guatemala and El Salvador, why aren't they coming to Belize? Why are they coming all the way through Mexico to the United States? What's your policy against illegal aliens? You just not offer any welfare benefits, or is it strict citizenship checks, or how do you do what we need to do? This is what I'm asking, really. Ellen? Where'd he go? Hopefully he's still there. Everybody still there? Hello?
Yeah, I'm here. Is Belize?
Still there. Go ahead.
Is Belize a, how'd you say, wealthy country? I'm just curious.
No, I'm wondering if Alan's having a little difficulty. Did he turn his phone off? He's still live on the line here.
Yeah,
so,
or it could be something. Sometimes my phone, all of a sudden, the sound goes dead. And you're just like, then you have to call back again. It's crazy with technology.
It looks like he dropped. Let me send him a message if he wants to call back. And I'll send a quick thing. So the nice thing about having Facebook, I can, you know, we have multiple methods of communication here. So let me just say, call back if you want.
Because yeah, I'd be curious to know, compared to the United States, is it more of a wealthy country? Is it? There he is. He's back. Okay.
Well, good. Let's put him back on the line here. Yeah. And as soon as it goes live, there we go. Thanks to the wonders of technology, Alan Dawson from Belize is now back on Action Radio. Hey, we lost you for a minute there.
Yeah, electricity went off for just a few seconds.
So it was electricity?
It
took
a while
for
the internet to connect back, get back online.
Hey, listen, when it happens
you
to
were
me,
asking a question.
When it happens to me, we lose electricity, we lose the whole show. You know, I have to actually start another episode.
Oh.
That's when it gets really crazy. Yeah, but and that's happened. We had a lightning storm a while back, and had to take over, and I had to.
But,
the show just went out. Yeah. Anyway, so go
but
ahead.
But then
Jane,
last week too, or whenever that was, when it went out, I didn't know if it was my end or your end. So that was really confusing.
Yeah, this is why we have Gene here, because you know, if something happens to me, the show goes on, which is good. So Gene had a question for you actually on I guess the wealth of Belize.
Sure.
And then I had a question on illegal aliens. So all the cool stuff we get to. Gene, why don't you go ahead?
Yeah, I was just curious on is it a wealthy country, or is everybody like pretty close to the same playing field, or is it it's like here where you got just a conglomerate of people, rich, you know, middle Americans, and then you got poor. That type of thing.
Yeah, that's how it is here. Yeah, you got the rich and the middle and the poor.
Okay.
And you got the real poor.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. But now, for the most part, I like to say that the country is a rich country. I like to say it's a rich country. I mean, if you don't work, you know what, I should change this because COVID came and changed everything. But before COVID, I used to like to say, if you don't have a job, because you're lazy, because Belize is self-sufficient. There's lots of opportunity here. There's lots of ways for you to be innovative. I mean, people just do their little thing and get out there and sell it, promote it itself. You get to pay your bills. You get to send your kids to school. You know, you have money coming, you know. But, yeah, I used to say that. But since COVID now, it changes a lot of that now.
Yeah. I'll tell you, Alan, quite honestly, if this country, you know, ever goes communist completely, you know, I'll be in Belize before you know it. So I'll move Action Radio in a second. And
I'll be there behind you.
Exactly. Jamie, right there. And I think most of my reporters would be there, too. Yeah. We'll just set up shop. We'll just set up Action Radio. Go ahead.
Your country will never go communist. No, I can't.
See, that's I'm with you there. I don't think it's going to. I think this is a temporary blip. I think people are tolerating the situation. The reason you don't see armed open rebellion in the streets is because we have a midterm election in a year. I think people know that. I think people think we'll just weather the storm. We'll survive these illegal, you know, insurrectionists, in other words, the Democrat Party, and the geldings that let them stay there. And I think we're just going to kind of hang here and wait to the midterm. Now, if the Democrats steal the midterms and keep controlling Congress, that's going to change everything. But I think people are pretty much, and the polls show it too. So if the Democrats take over Congress or keep control of Congress, that means massive vote fraud, and that creates a whole new set of problems. So hopefully things will go honestly, this time the geldings will do what they did in Virginia and actually watch the elections nationwide, and that shouldn't be a problem. All right, Bianchi's on the line, so I know he wants to talk food. I think we got up as far as dinner. So, Bianchi, welcome, sir. We got Alan from Belize on.
Yeah, good morning, Alan, Gene, and Greg.
Good morning.
What I was going to ask is, let me turn that off. Belize is a member of the OAS, which is the Organization of American States, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah,
and if you know, guess what role do they play with Belize in the other countries? Aren't they just like your United Nations?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, that's exactly it, Bianchi.
Well, explain a little bit what those are for the people that don't know, especially our new listeners in Azerbaijan, which I think is fascinating. What is the Organization of American States, and how does that affect the Central American countries, the Caribbean, and the United States, for people that don't even know what it is? This would be a good thing for us to explore, and then I'll probably let Alan go in a few minutes because he's been on. Bianchi, Alan's now coming on at 6 in the morning here, Central Time, so he starts early on Fridays. So you get your dinner order in early. Anyway, but yeah, this is an interesting topic. I'm one I hadn't thought of, but please proceed. What is the Organization of American States? You know, Pianki, you want to start? No, we have to Alan.
Well, I'll go let him explain because he's under it.
Okay, that makes sense. Alan, can you shed some light here?
No, go ahead, Pianki. Let Pianki go ahead, and then I'll just add to him.
Okay. Back to Pianki.
Well, it's about 20-some-odd. It's about 20-some-odd states, mm-hmm. Countries, should I say.
Right.
And I believe, I don't know if the United States is a member of it or not, but it's just like the United Nations. And the question is that the problems that they have with the crime, the warlords, and so on, I wonder why come those that organization doesn't address those problems in their countries. Like, you know, in Honduras, if you got problems with corrupt governments and so on, then why come those states, that organization, don't address that problem and provide the relief in that for the citizens of those countries?
Alan, you want to try something?
Yeah, so the organization was established in order to achieve among its member states, as stipulated in Article 1 of the chapter, an order of peace and justice to promote their solidarity, to strengthen their collaboration, and to defend their sovereignty, their territorial integrity, and their independence. So today the OAS brings together all 35 independent states of the Americas and the main political jurisdiction and social governmental forum in the hemisphere. In addition to its granted permanent observer status of 69 states, as well as to the European Union. So the organization uses a four-pronged approach to effectively implement its essential purposes based on its main pillars, democracy, human rights, security, and development.
But does the Belize government report to them at all? Do they have any actual authority, legal authority over them? Or is it just an organization, you know, that uses persuasion and spends money and hopes to promote their goals?
No, I think they have to, they go through them. The Belize government use them. They have to go through them.
Huh. See, that's interesting. Okay. I had a call that a little technical difficulty. Apparently my volume was a bit low, and so I've turned up the gain a bit. So the reason I keep it low is because a lot of times I've had my signal break up, so I'll make sure I'm not breaking up now. So Gene, you can tell me that if that's an issue. But yeah, I can always turn the volume up here. Try not to be too much here. So now this is interesting. So the European Union, I mean, those countries are absolutely under the thumb of the European Union. That's why Britain broke away. That's why Brexit happened. You know, and so, but whereas the United Nations, no country feels particularly obliged to do what the UN says, happily take their money, you know, and those folks are run by a bunch of radical socialist communist nations who outvote, you know, the free nations of the world because they're more communist, you know, they're more dictatorships than there are free countries. So the Organization of American States, you know, are they part of the UN? Is it a separate organization? And how much authority, if any, do they actually have? Do they have legal authority?
They're not part of the UN. My question is that with all the reasons why come people are fleeing, and I think they call it the three northern states, El Salvador, Honduras, and Guatemala.
Right.
And the reasons that they give, well, should not the OAS address those reasons? And one other point, how much aid do the OAS give to nations? I know that the United States give a lot of aid to nations for the very reasons why come people say they are leaving. Mm-hmm. And how much benefit is the OAS to the plight that people are escaping from?
That's a good question. Or just the nations in general that are members of the OAS. That's a good question. Alan?
Say it again.
Well, it's kind of a big question. It was something I'm guilty of all the time. So how much benefit is the OAS to Belief? Let's put it really in a straightforward nature. Do you guys need them, or do they need you more? And are they coercing spending money, or how are they influencing Belief policies?
I think it goes the other way. I think they need us more. I don't think we need them as much as they need us.
Any move to do anything about it, or you just figure they're just kind of there?
I don't think so. I don't think so. I haven't heard, any big news about things, because if the country is getting some sort of benefit, I mean, I don't think they see a need to not have them here to get rid of them or such, no?
Well, I think that if, say, for example, they gave you guys a wealth tax. In other words, if the Organization of American States decided that Belize has too much money, or Costa Rica has too much money, too much freedom. You got too much freedom and too much money. You need to pay, your fellow Central Americans, Honduras, Nicaragua, El Salvador. You need to pay money, restitution for your good fortune. Then you'd have a problem. Then you'd see a big objection. Then you'd leave immediately. I think that's what was happening in Britain. Britain was told to take a whole bunch of refugees and illegal, alien folks right into their country and take care of them, mostly from some of the Muslim countries of the Middle East. And Britain's got enough, folks getting, changing the character of Britain from other countries. They don't need that. But if you had a similar situation in Belize where you were told that you had to take a million extra people, or that you had to pay a certain amount of money because of your privilege to the rest of Central America, you guys would have a real problem with that, I would think.
Yeah.
Well, it's the thing.
Alan, first, let me get back. This is a fun discussion today. Alan, did you have a response to that?
Go ahead, Pianki. I was going to add something, but I'll wait until Pianki is finished. Go ahead.
Okay.
It's the same way with the African Union. The African Union is supposed to be representative of the countries there in Africa. And also they have what's called a fifth region, which are Africans that's in the diaspora. African Union is supposed to be like the United Nations is in common terms. But still, you have these wars that's going on, like you have presently in the Sudan, and also getting ready to spur off in Ethiopia. And then you have these problems with people like you have Congolese leaving the Congo and coming to the United States, going through country after country after country. So if something's wrong with that picture, these organizations are not fulfilling the purpose that they originally stated that they should be filling. And everybody is throwing their weight upon the United States.
Alan, what do you think?
See, we've always had a territorial dispute between Belize and Guatemala. I don't know if you guys ever heard or read about that issue. And that was a case where Belize had to use the OAS, because remember their purpose, their objective here, they're to strengthen the peace and security between Western Hemisphere countries, right?
Okay.
To promote the peaceful settlement of disputes between member states, to provide for collective security, and to encourage cooperation in economic, social, and cultural matters. So, it's at the Caribbean Courts of Justice right now. Remember that territorial issue between Belize and Guatemala? And I remember clearly there was a lot of members from that organization of the American state that was involved with this issue, trying to get this territorial issue settled between Belize and Guatemala.
It's interesting you have a Caribbean court. I didn't even know that. Is that an internet part of the international court system, or how does that work? Or is it its own court, or part of Organization of American States court?
That's different. Yeah, the OAS is different from the ICJ. The ICJ is the International Courts of Justice.
Okay, interesting. So I guess the last question I have, and like I say, I've got I don't want to keep you too long, but you guys don't have the caravans running into Belize, you know, for a country that's doing well, a wealthy country, you know, as you say that you don't, the caravans are just bypassing. What policies do you have that you don't have a huge illegal alien problem, given the fact that you got poorer countries right around you? What are you guys doing?
You know what? They do have some serious policy. As a matter of fact, when that big caravan was going into the U.S., some of them came to the Belize border. There was a group of them that came there.
But oh.
Because of our serious things in place, policies in place, they were not allowed to come in. None of them were able to come in.
Was the military at the border?
Some serious policy in place, yeah. Right at the Belize-Guatemala border right there. Some of them came there. A little small group came there. But
well, the Dominican Republic...
Go ahead, Bianchi.
The Dominican Republic is a member of the OAS. Why do Haitians leave and go all the way down to Argentina and try to work their way up to the American border? I don't understand that.
Yeah,
I really don't.
Question myself. Dominican Republic's right over
and,
there.
And here's
the
another question.
Yeah.
Here's
well,
another question. Yeah.
Well, I want to hold that one, too. All right, go ahead.
Here's another question. With Black Americans, BLM, complaining so much about the conditions in the United States, are you open to take a caravan of Black Americans to come to your country since they hate America so much?
Oh, well, let's take that. This
yeah,
one,
bring
this
them
is
over.
Much more interesting.
Bring them here.
What's that, Ellen?
I said, bring them over. We'll take them in.
Oh, that's fascinating.
They'll fit right in.
Well, here's a question for you. In the United States, there's a lot of Black Americans that call themselves African Americans. Do you have the Black people that are in Belize that came from slavery for the celebration that you just had that it ended? Do Black Belizeans call themselves African Belizeans?
Yes, because for the most part, we all originally came from some parts of Africa. So, for example, myself, I am a Creole ethnic group. Creole ethnic group is a mixture of African with European, so English, Scottish, Irish. So, like my great-grandfather, he was an English guy, white guy, blue eyes, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so, for the most part, we originated from some parts of Africa. It doesn't matter what village, what town, what city, you know. And so... we have that connection with Africa.
But you don't call
so
yourself
some
an African.
Of us you find dark skin.
Right.
So some of us you find dark skin. Some of us you find a little fair skin, but we have the curly hair, we have the wide nose. Yeah, proof that of our origin, right? So we can't.
But you,
we can't fight against that.
But you, well, you shouldn't. I'm saying fight against. I mean, be proud of your heritage. I'm proud of mine. You know, I have English and Greek heritage.
Oh yeah.
You know, and Australian and Canadian by nationality, English and Greek by ancestry. You know, I'm proud of all of it. And, of course, all those countries have made, you know, huge mistakes and problems and all kinds of things. It doesn't matter. History is history. But my question is, though, is that, you know, we have the African-American, the hyphenated American, the split loyalty. You know, it's not enough to be American. You know, there are people that call that split their ancestry, you know, for whatever reason. But, and is Belizean the right term for someone from Belize, you know, and do you have African Belizeans or Belizean Africans? In other words, do Black people from Africa in Belize or anybody of African ancestry, is there a hyphenated, is there a definition? Do you call yourself, you know, Belizean or do you call yourself, you know, African Belizean or, you know, European Belizean or any of those other subdivisions that really split up a country?
Now, do they call themselves Black?
Or do you call yourself Black? That's a good question,
no,
too.
No,
yeah, that's a great
we
question.
Just call ourselves Belizeans. We just call ourselves Belizeans. Yeah, that's it, general. Yeah, we don't differentiate.
Do you call yourself Black?
Black American, the Black Belizeans, the, you know, Black, you know, we don't separate them.
But do you call yourself Black?
Yeah, because we have that Black heritage, you know. That Black origin.
Well, let me ask you another question.
It's not a big thing here.
And I'm not trying to put you on the spot. You have African countries, for instance, you have African countries like Senegal told the Haitians, come on back over to Senegal, and you can carve out you a portion of the land. Zimbabwe have told black American farmers, come over, you can have all the land you want. Ghana, you have one region there in the Volta region that set aside, the stool put aside 30,000 acres for African and diaspora to come back. Why come nobody wants to come back? Even though they talk about it, but they talk about and reference a place nobody wants to leave and go, especially if you're in America.
That's fascinating. I didn't know that.
I know. That's very
Ellen?
Interesting. I said that's very, very interesting. Why don't they want to go back?
Probably because they never
you
came
hear
from there.
Black American, you
because
hear
they're American.
Groups,
yeah.
You hear some groups of black Americans that talk about leaving, starting their own, mm-hmm. having their own school. Actually, what they're doing is resegregating. They yeah. complained about how whites segregated them. Now they want to segregate. But they don't leave. Now, you have a few that go back on retirement and stay in countries like Ghana. But when the big offers go back, they don't leave.
That's fascinating. Hey, Pianki, can you post some information on that? Action Radio Group, or message it to me. This is something that this would be a fascinating thing for us to talk about, simply because it
you
shows
know,
the hypocrisy, you know, of the folks who are out there that say,
too.
"Well, go ahead, yeah."
In the country of Liberia, West Africa. The only people that can become citizens is the Negro. It's written in their constitution, and it was like that when it was formed with President Monroe way back in the day. But nobody wants to go.
What do you think? Why do you think, Bianchi? Why don't they want to go?
I think people like to complain, but they're not leaving the United States. No matter how bad off you are, the poorest of the poor in the United States is better off than 99% of the poor in the rest of the world. And they just like to talk.
But they wouldn't be poor if you're given farmland. I mean, how many people are given farmland here? Farmland's expensive. You know, land is expensive.
Yeah.
You know, and if you're yeah. getting farmland, you're probably going to have other subsidies and benefits and tax breaks and all kinds of things to encourage people to go. I remember there was actually a place up in Canada, Cape Breton Island, and it wasn't based on race, but they were trying to attract people there. But the thing is, there's, you know, they want you to go there, and you'll get, I think, like a house, and you can start a business, but there's no internet, and there's very little electricity. It's a very rural lifestyle, but it's absolutely gorgeous up there, and they had trouble finding people, but they were advertising for people to go. So there are places that do this, that need a population, that want to get folks to go there. But it's the proof of the lie, you know, what Pianki's talking about, that so-called African-Americans are really Americans, you know, claiming convenient African heritage when it suits them, like it suits them to make false accusations of racism and use words like white supremacy and white nationalism. This is all political, but when it comes right down to it, you know, when the opportunity is there to get farmland, to start a business, to move to another country, you know, that, I mean, this is why the Europeans came here in such huge numbers, you know, earlier in the 1900s, you know, when Ellis Island was open, they came for the opportunity. So if the opportunity is there and you don't take it, you give up the right to complain about whatever's going on in this country. Because it seems to me this would be a perfect opportunity to go make something. I would, you know, listen, if I had an opportunity in a different country, if someone said to me, Action Radio, we're going to set you up, we're going to give you grants, we're going to, you know, help you get going here, we think the citizen legislation is a great idea, I'd be very tempted to leave. Now, I wouldn't renounce my citizenship or anything stupid like that, but what I'm saying is I could broadcast from anywhere in the world. I haven't had an offer like that, but
you know,
it'd be interesting to take it.
Go
ahead, Pianki. Yeah.
Let me tell you how tremendous it is.
Uh-huh.
In Liberia, there's one area that's been offered. You know how large that area is? 750 square miles. I witness and know of the area in Ghana because my wife is from there. It's in the Volta region. It's a project mm-hmm. that was called the Fianca Project. That was 35,000 acres. You got Zimbabwe.
Mm-hmm.
You have even Kenya have offered black Americans the same opportunity. They're not leaving here. All it is a bunch of talk. And, well, they're Democrats, so what else?
I wonder how widely that's known. You know, if we made an issue of that, this is something that I think conservative politicians could make make some use of. Is the next time that you know, Black Lives Matter starts, you know, getting up and complains, "This is a horrible country. It's a racist country." You know, let's resegregate within America. Say, wait a minute, you know, if you're really African American, as you say, here's some perfectly good opportunities for African Americans in Africa. You know, why not try it? You know, it's not like we're, you know. Of course, the I'll tell you what's going to happen. There'll be accusations of racism. You're just trying to get rid of us. Here's an opportunity. You don't have to take it. You know, this is completely voluntary. But it's going to get twisted into, you know, you're a white supremacist. You're trying to kick out black people. You want to send black people back to Africa. You believe in slavery. Yada yada. We know how this is going to go. But the proof is, you know, that the fact that this opportunity is there, and anybody who complains, you know, that there are no opportunities when there's one staring him right in the face, gives up the right to complain, as far as I'm concerned. I think this is fascinating. We need to do more about this. Can we get a representative of Ghana on the Skype line? Let's get, Bianchi, if you have contacts in these countries, have them call in. Let's talk about it. I think it'd be fascinating. We got the Skype line. Anybody can call from anywhere in the world.
There you go.
Well, yeah, we could try.
Yeah. I'm trying to get Barry Shaw back from Israel too. He used to call us before our Skype line, but I think he spent too much money. He doesn't trust me anymore. Sorry, Barry. But so let me just for the mechanics of this, I don't want you to reveal any prices or anything like that. But it doesn't cost you a whole lot of money to use Skype to call us. It's just a regular account, right? And you can just call anywhere in the world, Alan. Is that how it works?
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay. Yeah, okay. Because I pay a Skype fee too to have the service, but it's nothing. It's really not much. You know, it's well worth having. I mean, you know, to get Al on the show, this is you know, I'm going to change the title of the show because obviously we're not going to get to my topic, which is fine. It's much more interesting to have these spontaneous discussions because this reveals a big lie. So just getting back to Alan for a second, it looks like Belize is doing something really smart in a couple of areas. One, in terms of, you know, quote, race relations, because you don't fight each other. You don't segregate. You don't, you know, use different skin colors as a weapon to get whatever perceived benefit you want. I think that's tremendously to your credit as Belizeans. And the second thing I think is really important is the fact that you don't let illegal aliens storm your borders. You maintain the integrity of your country.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure people can come, you know, legally and settle there. So, you know, it wouldn't be a big issue. Well, let's say I wanted to move Action Radio to Belize. You know, would I have to get a work permit? Would I have to get a visa? You know, would have to be renewed so often? Let's just play with this for a bit. So say I want to come down here, and then we can talk about those other issues. But if say I want to set up, you know, Action Radio in Belize City, broadcasting worldwide from the tropical capital of the world, Belize City, Action Radio has moved. What would it take me to do that? How would I do that?
First of all, you don't need to get a visa to come here, being an American
okay.
citizen.
Mm-hmm.
But to set up a radio station, now you need to get a permit. You need to get a license from.
No, it wouldn't be a radio station.
There's a department.
No, I broadcast from my computer just like I do now. There wouldn't be anything to set up. I just, you know, open my computer up, plug it in, get my Wi-Fi, connect my microphone, and
uh-huh.
broadcast just like I do now. There is no studio.
Yeah, you still need
yeah.
to go do a clearance. Yeah, there's
okay.
a communication office that you need to check with to get a clearance, and you need to get some kind of license or permit to operate that radio station from out of the country.
Yeah,
but it's a simple process. It's not going to be anything difficult for you to come and broadcast out of Belize.
I'll
find out for you and let you know.
I
could find out.
Yeah.
I'll just
this
ask because I have a few people that I know from media houses. But I tell you what, that would be a great thing. That would be a great thing if it could happen.
Would they?
I know it's not going to happen soon. Greg's not going to come to Belize. If he comes to Belize, he's going to come for just a weekend. Operate from
week.
Here and then go back, right?
Yeah, probably a week.
Oh, a
I'd like
week,
to do
okay.
one week. I'd like to do 1 week a year
yeah.
in Belize, and so let's look at 2022, possibly sometime like right before, like about a year from now, like right before the tourist season kicks in. So I want to go the week
okay.
beforehand, so it's
yeah.
still cheap, you know, but it's also not that hot either.
That would be cool.
You know, yeah.
Yeah,
so let's,
exactly.
Let's,
cooler time
yeah.
of the year.
Yeah, so we'll kind of aim for that, and we'll get people a chance to get going. But the other thing, too, is you got to get rid of your vaccine mandate. I'm not going to come down as long as there's a vaccine mandate. I won't do it. I'm not going to do that to myself. So you're talking to the folks in tourism, tell them to get rid of that mandate, and I think you'd probably double your tourist numbers.
Well, I don't. You just need to get your test. You'll have to do a test before you hop on any one of those American Airlines anyway, right? Before you leave.
Am I right? Is it just a test? I'm happy to get tested. You know, as long as I don't pull that thing up my nose too far.
Within 24 hours.
Oh.
Let me ask a question.
Show that result here, and then you're good.
Let me ask a question.
Go
ahead, Bianchi.
But
is smallpox worse? Is smallpox more deadly than COVID?
Hold on, that's a really important point. Let's cause I got a few minutes. I want to talk. That was actually the point of the show here. Let me get the last thing.
Let me tell you why I asked that question.
No, I know.
Let me tell you why I asked that question.
All right, go ahead. Yeah.
You can have an exempt form in your passport. You get it off the internet, fill it out, put it in your passport. And when you go through customs, you show them that exemption, and you don't have to prove that you had a smallpox inoculation.
Okay.
So why come it's not the same with this COVID?
Because COVID's political. But anyway, Alan, you want to try that one?
Yeah.
No, I'll leave that one alone.
Well, see, now here's the point. If Yucky's as bad as I am when it comes to asking questions, you know, we don't care. We're both, you know, fearless. But here's the thing, though. And in fact, I'll probably change the title of the show today. I might pick this up Monday. But there are serious articles coming out. I've got a few of them on the fact 15 smallpox vials were in a Merck lab, which is a private company, and they're not allowed to be there. They're supposed to be heavily guarded. I think there's only two labs in the world. One in one of our universities, North Carolina or South Carolina, and one in Russia. They're the only two places that are certified, quote, to be able to maintain the smallpox virus. We're going to talk about that more, I think, Monday. But the question, and I think I was vaccinated when I was a kid because I got one of those. I still have that my yellow card for when I went to Europe when I was 5 years old. You know, so I've still got my vaccine record from the things that we had to take before going to Europe, and everybody did it back in the 60s. You know, and so you know, I've had my. I can almost guarantee that I had a smallpox vaccine in there somewhere, simply because everybody did, as far as I know. But and it's gone. Fortunately, it is gone. So you know, whatever the reason for smallpox disappearing, we don't have it around much, unless these you know diabolical monsters release it like they release COVID. And that's a whole other story.
Greg, didn't Bill Gates say something about smallpox?
That's what we're going to trace. Yeah, I haven't gotten as far as that. If you want to look something like that, look up what he said about it. You know, and here's the current theory. And Alan, you know, you may or may not want to weigh in on this. We've got about 7 minutes before Derek Park joins us. In fact, Alan, if you want to hang around for our financial report, feel free. You might find this fascinating. But rumor has it that COVID has such a low mortality rate, less than 1%, that it didn't depopulate the world the way the global masters wanted it depopulated. I'm not convinced they want to do that. To me, it makes no sense. These people are monsters, but they're not stupid. And if they kill off half the world's population, who's going to do their work? Who's going to produce their goods? Who's going to mine their lithium for their electric cars? You know, who's going to pay for the products that they produce? You know, it doesn't make sense. And besides, the world, in a lot of cases, like China's heading for a population cliff because they had a one-child policy. So families for a generation only allowed their boy, you know, children to live. So now you've got millions and millions and millions of men in China that are never going to find women, never going to find wives because the overbalance in population is huge. Taiwan has the same problem. They're not having kids. I just found that out yesterday. So the natural, in a lot of places in the world, the population is declining anyway. So it's just, I'm not convinced that the globalists, I mean, I know they want power and control, but more people means more power. So I don't understand why they want to cut the world population in half. That, you know, that's a whole different question.
Okay, here it says Bill Gates warns of smallpox terror attacks as he seeks research funds, and this is as of November 9th.
Okay, yes. Yeah, so send that to me in the messenger, please, because I want to look into that. But here's what. Let me see if I can get the most powerful of my articles here. We got a few minutes left, and so let me see. This is Natural News. This is the source I cannot publish because it's instantly censored. Natural News. This would be November 18th. So yesterday, Mike Adams, the editor, the smallpox bio war. Globalists prepare perfect scheme to cover up vaccine deaths and cancel midterm elections by unleashing a new deadly epidemic. Okay, I'm going to report this. I'm not convinced of it yet because I want to do more research. But this is what he's saying, and this is the most extreme view of what's going on, and then you can kind of take this as you will, and I have other sources too. He says, the good news is that the Biden vaccine mandate is almost certainly going to be struck down by the Sixth Court of Appeals. It was already struck down by the Fifth Circuit. Sixth Circuit is probably going to do that too with their lawsuits. He says, this will hand Biden a crushing defeat of his attempted agenda to mass exterminate the American people via vaccine bioweapons. And a lot of people are starting to call these vaccines bioweapons. And I tend to agree with him on that. He says the bad news is that once the vaccine mandate is struck down, globalists will be forced to resort to their next devastating strategy to achieve their goals of genocide and depopulation. It looks like their next weapon is going to be the Marburg, Ebola, or smallpox virus. Right? Smallpox is the most likely choice because it's extremely contagious and almost no one has immunity against it yet because we've been vaccinated out of it or it's just gone away. He says, Bill Gates has repeatedly warned with a creepy grin that America should be ready for a smallpox terrorism attack targeting U.S. airports. When Bill Gates warns about something like this, it's usually because globalists are planning to carry it out. Gene, did anything in that article you have talk about airports terrorism or anything like that? What are they talking about in terms of smallpox?
Well, I haven't read through it all yet. No, I haven't seen anything about that, about airports or anything. But I did read or heard, was it yesterday, that, oh, God, it's so much more, smallpox is so much more deadly than COVID.
Oh, hell yeah.
You know, so, you know, yeah. So the bottom line is this. That means, oh, God, are we headed for another lockdown?
Well, let's find out, because smallpox has been eradicated.
More than likely.
Wait a minute. The only way smallpox could come back is if it's introduced, because it's pretty much been wiped out worldwide.
Well, yeah, but the thing is, if they found those vials there, what are they doing with them there? They said, yeah, like you said, there was only two places in the world that are supposed to have smallpox anything because of the how deadly it is.
Yep. Here's more on the story. It says Yahoo News reported this week that vials labeled smallpox were discovered in a Merck laboratory. This is the one I talked about earlier, in violation of U.S. law. In the continental United States, only the CDC's facility in Atlanta is authorized to store smallpox vials. So what is Merck, a vaccine manufacturer, doing with smallpox vials? And of course, you know, gain of function, where they take something that's bad and make it worse, right? Okay. He says he wouldn't be crazy to suppose they're working on the next big bioweapons release to generate another wave of profits from smallpox vaccines. But a smallpox release by the globalists accomplishes much more than that, more than just depopulation. Okay, so let me just – one more paragraph, and then I'm gonna hold it because we're almost out of time here. Burying COVID vaccine deaths and halting the 2022 midterm elections. Okay, this is where he goes into speculation. So this is – so given that this is speculation, he says, the effect of a deliberate smallpox release by the anti-human globalists would be a covering up of COVID vaccine deaths, which are already beginning to wildly accelerate. Millions of people will die around the world from COVID vaccines in just the next 6 months as immune suppression, antibody dependent enhancement, and cancer tumor growth all accelerate. Ellen, I'm not trying to scare you, Ellen, but you know, this is why I say take those precautions. Take the things that prevent COVID will help, you know, detox you from the vaccine. Anyway, the globalist cabal is desperate to distract the world from the depopulation effects of the vaccine, so they need some larger mass death catastrophe to take the blame. That's just like having they wanted to do mail fraud to steal the election, but they couldn't just do it openly. They had to have COVID. The COVID was the excuse for the mail-in voting, which became the mail fraud. So I'm not buying into this yet. I need to see more evidence, but I am worried about the toxic effect of the vaccines. And so that's why, you know, I keep my concern for Alan, to get your quercetin, you know, your vitamin D3, vitamin C, you know, take those – and I'm serious about this. Go to your natural health provider, your alternative medicine, your natural health provider. In fact, I want to get them on the – and ask them if they have vaccine-reducing, you know, medicine. And if you do, I want them on the show. I'm serious. I'd love to have them on the show.
I'll
Let's
get a
talk about
this for you in the next 2 weeks.
Okay, sounds good. You're the best, Ellen. You're the best.
I'll see if I can get her to call in for you.
Yeah.
Greg?
Yeah, Jean.
Okay, this article says that billionaire Bill Gates has warned terrorists may deploy smallpox in a busy airport as a biological weapon in the future.
Mm-hmm. So how would he know that?
And this,
what, is he an intelligence officer? How would he know that?
But you know another thing. You know,
well, that's the question.
The United States Army used to do those type of experiments back in the 70s, where they would intentionally release bacteria, and then they would set up monitors at the airport to get an indication on how well they're being spread. In one area in St. Louis, in North St. Louis, and also at Pruitt-Igoe, which was a project there on Jefferson and Cass, they put machines up on top of the building that would emit a spray, and then they would, you know, basically sample the population unbeknownst of the population. So these things have been thought of a long time ago.
Oh, they're done. There was a famous case. In fact, I should look it up, or maybe Gene can look it up. San Francisco, the Navy, I think it was, or one of the, in cooperation with our public health people, you know, the earlier Dr. Fascists, they spread viruses off the coast of San Francisco, knowing full well that the wind would drift in, because the wind always blows onto the coastline. It comes right off the Pacific Ocean and reliably blows onto the West Coast. That's how we get that beautiful fog up and down the West Coast. And so there are rumors that and I think in the 50s and 60s, they were taking biological agents off the coast and letting them blow in and see what kind of effect it was having on the population. So that's definitely been done, as far as I know. Looks like I got Derek on the line, too. So you all want to stick around. We'll get into a financial report in a second here. Gene, if you want to check out the San Francisco offshore or any of those other things, feel free. And Alan, if you got some more time, if you can stick with us, that'd be great. Do you have some time or no?
I'll be logging off.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll get you. Too bad. All right.
Thank you.
Well, listen,
it's a great show.
Oh, tell us all your information. Make sure people can get in touch with you and your travel company, so that when they visit Belize, they know where to find you.
All right. So if you're traveling to Belize in the near future, you want to check out the Calypso Train Tours Company for your hour around the city on open trolley rides, so train tours. And thank you so much. This is Alan Dawson out of Belize in Central America with Action Radio.
Have
He's
a great
so
week.
You're such a professional. Alan, thank you so much. We'll talk to you next week. This is great.
Have a
All
good
right.
one.
You too. You take care. Have a great week. Bye. Let's get the money.
Okay.
Money. What is it? How does it work? How do you get it to work for you? So many choices. Stocks. Bonds, mutual funds, commodities, and then there are the markets. Oil, gold, manufacturing, trade, energy, even government. To make sense of all the places your money can go, Derek Park of Edward Jones Financial Advisors joins us Fridays at this time to make sense of the markets and your money. So we got the Skype line working now, Derek, and so Alan calls in. Alan Dawson, a friend of mine, he's a fellow tour guide, and I visited him when I was working a couple of cruises, you know, working for a singles group, which is really a trip. Anyway, so we got to be friends, and now that we have our Skype line working, he calls in on Friday. So what I might do, just out of curiosity for economic stuff, maybe if it's possible for you to call in earlier one Friday while he's still here. Because he's got some questions about foreign currency, Belizean dollars, which is, you know, set at half the American dollar, and just inflation, how it might be affecting other people. As our currency gets inflated, is it going to affect some of those countries? I don't know if you're versed in foreign currency or anything like that at all, but it might be something interesting to explore if you are. And then maybe we can get you guys connected so we can get you on at the same time. Good morning. What do you think?
Yeah, sure. I mean, obviously, next week that might not be an issue because we'll be out of town for Thanksgiving. So,
yeah, no, I don't think I'm going to have a show. In fact, I'll just say now, we're not going to have a Friday show. We're not going to have a Thursday show, obviously. So we'll cancel Friday, too. So everybody take your time, you know, take some time off. Go have some fun. But we just had Alan. It was supposed to be like a half-hour report, you know, on tourism and news of Belize. And he's on for an hour and a half. And Bianchi joins in. And Gene has all kinds of information and asks questions. And, of course, you know, I always have questions. But we've got this great international exchange going on right now with Belize. I want to try and get some more countries here too. Like I say, I want to try and get Barry Shaw back from Israel now that we have our Skype line. So if you know anybody internationally that wants to call in, you know, it's right there on every broadcast. You know, I post our Skype name, you know, live:cdcid.fddd, whatever it is. Yeah. Anyway. All right. So let's talk money, see what's going on with you, any news you have, and then we'll, and of course, I'll have my gazillion questions on, you know, the usual inflation, oil, China, you know, all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, mm-hmm. Have at it.
All right. Well, good morning. This is Derek Park of Everjones bringing you the Daily Financial Market Report. Equity markets traded in a lower range on Thursday with gains in the tech sector, helping the S&P 500 and NASDAQ finish modestly higher, while the Dow shed 60 points. This continued a string of rather modest moves this week, which have seen stocks touch fresh highs. The consumer discretionary and technology sectors were outperformers, driven by solid earnings from reports from companies within these industries. Meanwhile, 10-year yields ticked down slightly, closing below 1.6 mark. U.S. equities closed higher today. The Dow Jones closed down 60 points, or negative 0.17, and to 35,871. The NASDAQ composite closed up 72 points, or 0.45, to 15,994. And the S&P 500 closed up 16 points, or 0.34, to 4705. In the bond market, the 10-year Treasury yield, again, trading right at 1.6%, down 0.03 percentage points. In the commodity markets, the price of crude oil was up 81 cents, or 1.04%, to 78.36. And the spot price of gold was down $8, or minus 0.45, to 1861.80. This is Derek Park of Edward Jones, member SIPC. You can get me at 850-995-0082.
Yeah, interesting. What do you think of what's going on with the markets and inflation and stuff? I'm going to let you kind of, or any economic news you want to go over. And then, of course, I have my usual questions. What's happening?
Well,
what do you think?
Right now, there's not a big shakeup. So let's take last week, for example, okay. When the report that inflation was at 6.4% came out. The market reacted negative. It was down roughly 1% in the S&P 500 and the Dow. NASDAQ was down like 1.7%. But in the next 2 days, that was Wednesday of last week. Thursday and Friday, It pretty much closed the gap. I think right now where inflation, while it's high, it's not to the point that it's starting to have a major impact. It's to the point that people are complaining about it. You know what I mean? So,
right.
The impact is really where action starts to happen. So, everybody's hope, and I hear mixed signals from some of our analysts and from some other people that, April, May of next year, that, everything should kind of go heading back to normal. It's not like it's just going to happen overnight.
Why?
So we're hearing signals that this might last through next year. So another year of up inflation. They didn't say that it's going to continue to rise. They just said that it could end up being right about here and staying here for a little while. So, it's really hard to tell right now, unfortunately. I mean, we're going into the holiday season where people are going to be spending some money. And right now it doesn't seem to be having an impact on earnings. So, I say there's, I don't want to say a big impact. I will say minimal impact as of right now.
Okay. Here's what I think there's a little bit of a disconnect going on. You can tell me what you think of this, that people, they hear about inflation. They don't really know what it is. They think it means prices are rising. Prices rising, as we've talked about before, are a byproduct of inflation. Inflation is inflating the currency. In other words, printing more and more dollars, making, unless you increase the wealth of the country, making each dollar worth a little bit less, just because you print more of it to cover government debt or stimulus or any of the other things that are going on, it doesn't mean that you're getting more money into the more wealth into the economy. So you have to separate wealth from money. If you take just the dollars, and I always use the pizza pie example, if you have a large pizza, with 8 slices in it, and you say, well, I want to have more slices, I'm going to have 16 slices. You go, wow, I have more pizza. Well, no, you don't, because the pie is still the same. In fact, each piece is now half the size of the previous one. So you have 50% inflation. You've cut your money in half. You've cut your pizza slices in half. So unless you build a bigger pie, or make a bigger pie, increase your wealth, just printing more money doesn't help you. The disconnect, I think, is that we do have inflation and we do have price increases, but there's not a direct connection. There's, the reason that food is more expensive is because there's less energy. There's less available fuel. The cost of fuel has increased. The reason that cars are more expensive is a supply chain problem from Taiwan chips. that can't get through Los Angeles, you know, into the car manufacturers to, and truck manufacturers to build more trucks. So there are things that are, there are a lot of things that are contributing to price increases, all right, but not all of it is inflation. Inflation is a big part of it, but it's not the only thing. And I think the disconnect is people think the only reason for price increases is inflation, and it's simply not true. And even if inflation subsides, you still may get large price increases from these other factors. And I don't think either the general public or the market right now, certainly the great writers of financial news, are factoring that in. What do you think?
Yeah, so what people don't understand is, you know, inflation is a lagging indicator. You know, the process has already happened that creates inflation. You know, so now everything that we have to do is reactionary. You know, so the Fed should get involved. They might not have to get involved. Some things may work themselves out. You know, obviously people get tired of paying higher prices and naturally kind of quit buying. I think that after the holiday season is probably going to self-perpetuate. You know, I mean, obviously we're leading into a season where people naturally spend more money, and then you go into January and February, which is leading into tax season, and everybody's like, oh God, how bad is the damage going to be? You know what I mean? So, you know, it's kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy that happens every year, you know? So I think, you know, with after this season, I'm in agreement that some things will work itself out, but I do believe that the Fed is also going to get involved. I kind of got a gentleman's bet with somebody that the Fed will raise rates at least 0.25% before April 1st.
But if they do that, they're going to slow an already slow economy. You've got an economy burdened by inflation. This is the problem with having zero interest rates, is that there's nowhere to go unless you have negative interest rates. And you know, but where do you go from near zero interest rates in terms of having an effect on the economy? And you don't want to slow it down. It's already slow because of inflation. So why would raising interest rates make sense? Help me out here.
So raising interest rates incentivizes people to keep money in banks because they start paying you more for it. You know,
so it
increases savings opportunities. They can issue bonds at higher yields. You know, it opens more doors for a lot of people. While 0.25% is a bump in the road, it is heading in that direction. And I think if they don't start heading that direction, they're going to have to make more drastic increases, which is going to be a recipe for disaster for the market.
Yeah, there's a reason.
You know, I mean, typically.
Yeah, go ahead.
Typically, the market reacts negative to those type of things. You know what I mean? So if they're just doing it 0.25% of time, you know, I mean, it's a very minimal impact, and the market kind of works itself out and says, okay, it wasn't all that bad, and then they move forward, right? Well, you know, by them raising it 0.25%, they're kind of stopping people from borrowing money, which gives them more free money to go do what they want to do. And also, to your point, I mean, yeah, they have to increase the value of money by slowing down the printing of money. That's called tightening the money supply. So they've got those two things in their kit. You know, obviously, you know, we've got minimum wage increases, which are supposed to go into effect in several states. You know, that's going to drive the cost of things. Say again.
Yeah, we got a $10 minimum wage in Florida as of September 30th.
Oh, right. But it's supposed to go to 15 in a lot of places. You know, so, you know, that was voted in Florida, but it was over like a five year sliding scale. You know, So with that, I mean, that's going to drive some more cost increases, and there are some other things and some other mitigating factors with the cost of raising people's pay and things like that. But you know, again, once they get these supply chain issues worked out, which means everything is kind of back to normal with the way things are. Obviously, you still have the microchip issue. I think NVIDIA said their microchip issue is going to take another year for them to get back on even keel.
Is that producing or supplying or getting them here through the ports? Where's the hang up with the chips?
You know, I don't know on the chips. I think it's a supply issue. So as the last article that I read on this one, which was a while ago, basically said when COVID happened, you know, all the microchips that they have to send for like vehicles and, you know, appliances and things like that, they kind of redirected towards computers and, you know, servers and game systems and things like that for people to do at home, because
stuff.
That was the push, you know, so here now they're having to shift gears backwards and they just don't have the production capacity to keep up, you know, so I guess it'd be a good time to open a microchip company.
Well, I was just going to say, this would be a great chance for a venture capitalist or a state like Florida, for example, to start saying, hey, let's have some big fat tax breaks, you know, for companies that want to start microchip production in Florida, especially with all the people, you know, moving here from different states. You know, that already have a lot of high tech experience. We've got, I think this isn't high tech, but we've got 2,000 Disney workers coming here from Southern California. We've got people coming here all the time, and we need to definitely improve our economy here, and we need to keep the illegal aliens from taking those jobs. That's a whole other issue. There's something. This is really interesting today. There's something that hasn't been talked about. You know, let's call it the R word: recession. If you increase interest rates, if you have inflation, if you have supply chain problems, if you have costs that people are going to spend money now, January and February, you know, you get, what is it, two quarters in a row constitutes a recession. If there's a recession next year before the 2022 midterms, it's going to get really interesting on the political scene as well as the economic scene. What do you think?
But, you know, I mean, all these things that we're doing right now, I mean, if inflation doesn't get back in hand, and the Fed has to start reacting to an economy that's already slowing, I mean, that's pretty much terraforming a recession.
Okay.
So, I mean, where we are, Greg, I mean, just kind of look at this. You know, a recession is not a bad thing. It is a bad thing temporarily, but you have to understand there are some positives coming with a recession. You know, basically that means, hey, our economy's shrinking. It's a moment for everybody to kind of regroup, get together, and our dollar sinks in value, which they're already doing right now, which is not terrible where it's at right now. You know, I tell people to start worrying when it gets below 70% of its value. That's when it's bad, you know. And again, the government's going to make changes to fix all that. But when our value, you have to understand, we're 24% of the world's economy, right?
Mm-hmm.
If our value goes down to 70%, what does that do for everybody else? It makes our goods cheaper. So that means that they can buy more of whatever it is, and we can start exporting. Well, what happens when that happens? The economy booms right after that, right? Because everybody's buying all our stuff. So you have to understand that it's a 1 year bump in the road. It's a normal part of the economic cycle. My personal opinion was, I was hoping COVID would kind of draw out a deep recession and we would have come out of it, you know what I mean? And never had to worry about it for another 10 years. Well, that didn't happen. You know what I mean? Our market kind of said, we're in too good shape for this to kind of go away. And our market showed that. So, obviously where we are now is kind of back where we were before, kind of shrugging our shoulders saying, hey, what next?
Well, it's really interesting. I got Pianchi, who's back online, I'll get to him in a second, that the stimulus, in a way, sort of headed off a recession because they put so much of our money, you know, they took it and gave it, you know, printed a whole bunch of money for the stimulus back to us, that in some ways this might even be an artificial cover of a recession that would have happened naturally. See, I agree with you. Recession is not a bad thing. It means that something is in the economy is screwing up and it needs to be corrected. And that's how a free market's supposed to work. Just like there's no such thing as a bank that's too big to fail. Nothing's too big to fail. If it fails, then they screwed up. Something will replace them. Probably a whole lot of little things that will eventually gobble each other and grow into bigger things. You know, that's how the market works. It's supposed to work.
WorldCom and Pan American.
Yeah, exactly. You know, there's a lot of companies. I mean, companies come and go. And that's okay. As George Carlin said about species that are becoming extinct, let them go. They've been selected out. You know, that's how it works. It's fascinating. Let's get Pianchi in the conversation here. And by the way, Pianchi, you should listen to our podcast, Derek, when you get a chance, because Pianchi and Alan had a fascinating chat. In fact, it was great to have Alan on for an hour and a half. I'm going to change the title of the show to A Special Report from Belize just because of what happened. We never even got to my topic. We're not going to, because we'll be guns after you for the last hour. So it's going to be kind of fun. Pianchi, you're on with Derek Park and our economic debate for the week, which we do each week at this time.
Pianchi? Well, you was talking about chips. One of the largest chip maker in the world is their headquartered in operations in Taiwan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what
I'm
talking
about. During his administration, Trump had talked to that company and got them to agree the bill and extension in Arizona worth $12 billion. And of course, Joe Biden is trying to take claim for it. But it gives you the reason why some China is so interested in taking over Taiwan.
Yeah.
Because
we talked about this actually yesterday.
Control the operation.
Yeah,
now, what I wanted
with,
to ask also.
With Claire Lopez, we talked about that, about Taiwan. So folks want to refer back to that. The last 45 minutes of the show yesterday with Claire was absolutely fascinating in terms of China. Go ahead, Bianchi.
Yeah, what I was going to ask, too, if we got a state where everybody in the state has got $100 in their pocket, what happens when you bring in 1 million illegals? Where does the money come to put money in their pocket?
Like $450,000, allegedly, reparation for something that didn't happen? Yeah, that's a good question. Derek?
Man.
You don't have to have an answer. You can speculate. You can speculate with the rest of us. We don't guarantee answers here. Just that we attack a question and see what we can make of it. And we'll see if Gene has an opinion on this, too. Derek, what do you think? 2 million illegal aliens are going to affect everything.
I'm sure they are. You know, I mean, our social systems already have something like 40% of people that have been on there permanently. Mm-hmm. And they say that of those 40%, like 80% of them have the capability to be off. You know, so and they said that number should, with COVID, surge to something like 60%. You know, so what's happening is you're seeing people become more dependent upon the government. You know, I mean, look at other socialistic countries and let me know how well that worked out. You know, it normally doesn't work out very well. You know, you know, right now, as it's always been, you know, the middle class kind of supports everything. So what's going to happen is all these, you know, these tax raises that they said weren't going to happen, they're going to get more sneaky with it. And, you know, mm-hmm. I mean, we'll end up paying for it some way, shape or form.
Well, if everybody's got $100 in their pocket and there's no more money, it's all in the pocket of people where it should be. If you bring in 1 million illegals and you print up enough money so they can have $100, now your $100 for everybody is effectively worth only $50. Do people realize how that works?
Derek?
I'm sure they do. You know, it's devaluing currency. I mean, it's what's going on right now with them, you know, constantly printing money. But, you know, keep in mind that they're selling bonds. I mean, and I know people don't like to hear this, but the USA is a big business, you know, and when they print money and they sell bonds, I mean, they're trying to make profit on that money so they can run the government and spend more money. Now, is it a good thing with what they do? No, not necessarily, you know, but, you know, obviously that's really what happened. So our currency right now is about, I mean, you kind of almost said it, like is about 90% of what its original value was.
Original when? Because we're about probably about 3 cents of a 1913 dollar when the Fed took over our currency.
Yeah, well, I'm talking about where it was 4 or 5 years ago, where it was right at roughly par value. You know, par value being a dollar. Now, what you're talking about is you know, the devaluing of currency, spending power. I mean, that's just the natural raise in prices with the way things are. They say spending power, but, I mean, that could really go different ways. You know what I mean? Like, that I saw somebody saying that, like, in 1960, somebody could work on minimum wage and support themselves, and that's not true either. That might have been
no,
true in certain places. Yeah, it's not, you know, so – saying the spending power, I mean, there's a lot of arguments against that one. So
I'm going to pull up an inflation calculator and show you just how bad this is. Inflation calculator.
Well, I mean, if you're making, I guess, more money and people are paying more, which obviously it's not keeping up with, I guess, on averages. I would say inflation is not always a bad thing. It is a natural part of economic cycles. Now, hyperinflation or increased heightened inflation is not.
Yeah, hyperinflation I'm not as worried about. I mean, that's when governments borrow ridiculous amounts of money, causing all kinds of problems. All right, I mean, huge problems. I mean, you know, wheelbarrows full of cash. So I just pulled up the inflation calculator, U.S. inflation calculator. Anybody can do this. If in 1913 – you know, you had an item that cost a dollar, what would that cost you today? $27.94. You know, so the cumulative rate of inflation is 2,693.8% since 1913 when the Fed took over.
Isn't that scary?
Yeah, it is scary. I want to reverse it. I want to see if we can get the reverse of that. So I guess that would be 1 divided by, let's see if I can reverse it, because it only goes that way. Oh, well, let me reverse the years. Let's say 2021, and Adam Casadala, what would it cost in 1913? See if we can reverse this here. Calculate. 4 cents. So a dollar today is worth 4 cents of what it was in 1913, which is pretty much what I said. I thought it was closer to 3, but yeah, 4 cents. So that means that the devaluation of our dollar since 1913 is 96.4%.
But if you look at everybody's currency in every country, it's the same thing. In everyone that's thrived, I mean, you know, the cost of goods and services has always gone up. You know, so you know, people are talking buying power. It's not like it would ever stay the same. You know, I mean, like things get more expensive. It gets more expensive to produce. You have to pay people. So, I mean, it is a self-perpetuating cycle.
Well, why does it get more expensive to produce? You know, I mean, the Fed has this goal of like 3% inflation a year. I want 3% deflation a year. I love deflation. I love the fact that we have, you know, fewer dollars with each dollar worth more. I'd love to get back to a 1913 dollar. What's wrong with that? They all scream and yell, oh, you can't have deflation. It would ruin the economy, ruin everything. All it would ruin is the bankers, you know, making, you know, their ever-increasing loans. I think that's why they have inflation. I mean, the central bank makes money off loans. So if they can keep devaluing the money, that means people need more money to do the same things they did before, which means they make more loans, they pay more interest, and the bankers get rich. That's the whole point of inflation, isn't it? I mean, really?
Well, you'll
get down to it.
Next year. You just won't have it back to 1913 levels.
Okay, so let's talk about deflation. Why you know, anytime that happens, that the prices reduce or that the dollar becomes worth more, the economists, especially the big bank economists, they scream and yell like the world's coming to an end. What's so bad about deflation? To me, it increases wealth because each person's dollar gets worth more.
Let's use like oil for an example, okay? And I like oil because, you know, what did we have just not too long ago? We had a surge in oil where we had so much oil because of what? We shut down the damn economy. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
Like nobody was driving around. Imagine that. We've got more oil than we know what to do with. You know, so, you know, it got to a point where the futures were in negative numbers. So that's basically saying it's cheaper for them to give oil away.
Oh,
you know,
Jesus.
So,
yeah, okay.
Yeah, well, I mean, that happened. You know what I mean? I have people calling saying, can I buy oil right now on the futures? I'm like, technically, no, it surged overnight. And what's going to happen is it's going to open at an average price. And I mean, that's just what they're, it's a long story. But anyway, you know, the whole point of the premise is when you have a oil glut, you know, as they call it, what happened to oil prices? Boom, they plummet, you know, because they've got to make the prices very attractive for people to say, okay, I want to go drive more, whether I need to drive or not. Let's go get in the car. Let's go drive around. Right. You know, so they did that and it stayed that way for the longest period until they got rid of the oil glut and everybody started going back to work. And then they're like, oh, everybody needs oil. Now we're a little bit behind in production. So let's jack the price. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
Some of that is a little bit of corporate greed. Some of that's a little bit of them filling the coffers. You know, I'm not really going to get into that, but the bottom line is the economy works
the
exact way.
It's still supply and demand. It's still supply and demand, and if they're changing the supply so that it's more expensive, then that's going to be reflected in the market. People who might have taken a trip are going to say, screw that. You know, I'll walk.
Right.
You know, so, I mean
– So the economy is the same way, Greg. You know, I mean, as soon as things get to the point that people are like, I don't want to buy it anymore. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They're just like, damn, it's too expensive. I don't want to go out and spend anything. So what happens? They have a backup, and they start running out of storage room for all this stuff. They're just like, holy crap, we've got so much stuff. What do we do with it? Well, the only thing you can do, discount it to a point that people are like, all right, I'm going to go ahead and go get it. At that point, because they've got so much of a supply line, the company can afford to do that. They can run their prices to rock bottom. So what do you get when that happens? You get deflation. You know, so, I mean, when is it going to happen? Hell, I mean, that's the tough call. You know, like I said, I've got little gentleman's bet with people just because I think things are going to happen. But, you know, I mean, the Fed itself, you know, sometimes does things that are very counterproductive for the economic cycle. You know it. I know it. You know, and where we're at right now is, you know, we're at a crossroads where inflation is here and the Fed's not really to the point where they want to start making decisions, because every decision they make is going to cause bad things.
Yeah, especially in an election year. So I'll tell you, watch for the word recession. It's going to get suppressed really quickly. It's going to become the R word. You're not going to want to have – no one's going to want to talk about it. We've already talked about it. We've already broke the news here. I don't think anybody else has mentioned it. So this is Action Radio being on the cutting edge of freedom. You watch. They're going to do everything to avoid that word. Jen Psaki is going to get up there, and anybody that uses the word recession is going to be banned from the White House. From the White House.
Yeah.
You watch. Yeah. That's the first. And in fact, they probably already warned him. Whatever you do, don't say this. We're telling you right now, we're preempting this. But that's what might happen, you know, as things slow down. And here's the other thing that hasn't been taken into account. We had Kevin McCarthy spoke last night for about 2 hours against the second Green New Deal stimulus, total waste of money, socialist spending, Marxist, you know, takeover of our economy. And that hasn't been figured into the market yet either. But you want to talk about printing money to raise more? So you're going to have, I believe the term is stagflation, where you have rampant inflation and a stagnant economy because you've got the supply chain problems, you've got the money problems, you've got the printing problems, you've got all these other things that are coming together. Basically, we're redoing Jimmy Carter on steroids is what seems to be happening. Why the hell would Congress want to have another, you know, stimulus on top of the previous stimulus, but on top of the stimuli before that, all to the detriment of the economy? And this is economic suicide.
Yeah, I agree. it's actually so in our side of the realm over here, it's not the dirty R word, it's the dirty S word.
Which, what's that?
We don't want to hear stagflation. You know what I mean? Nobody on our side of the business, we would rather hear recession than stagflation, you know?
Okay.
That's not a good thing, you know, because recession, I mean, there's an end in sight. Stagflation, what did that last with Jimmy Carter, like 3 years? You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah,
like,
the misery index,
It did, but the market, you know, so funnily, I tell people, I'm like, even while there was stagflation going off, Jimmy Carter, from beginning to end, the market went up like 36%, you know, so... That's still, I mean, you could basically say 8% a year. That's not bad. You know what I mean? That's actually okay. So even during stagflation, the market was still in a rise. You know, it's just, it's very, very slow and very, very stagnant. You know what I mean? Like, I think all these people, you know, for the past, you know, 3 years have gotten used to seeing 30% returns. You know, and they're about to get slapped in the face.
That's the Trump economy. So here's the thing, too, that just the last comment. I'm going to make Jim's line live in case he wants to get into a little economic discussion. You look at every problem we have now, supply chain, energy, inflation, massive printing of money, cost overrun, stimulus. None of that stuff is happening under Trump. So you look at every problem today. It's all been created since the Biden insurrection, since they stole the White House, since they you're free not to comment as I'm commenting. But the thing is, none of this stuff had to happen. It's all artificial and can all be turned around again just as fast as it happened by simply having better proposals, resealing the border, making it impossible for illegal aliens to live here, cutting off all the benefits, you know, opening up the oil reserves, opening up the drilling leases again, because leases are only temporary. That's why you have to keep opening up new ones, you know, as I understand it. You know, getting that Arizona, you know, chip manufacturer, the one that's associated with the plant in Taiwan, get that going. All different things we can do. All this is so correctable. I am surprised. I am very surprised that the financial writers on Wall Street, you know, aren't screaming and yelling about the Biden insurrection, President Brandon, and not saying, what the hell are you doing, you stupid moron? Fix this. Reverse everything. Go back to the way it was under Trump. I don't care what you think of Trump. It was working. Why aren't they saying that?
There are people saying that, believe it or not.
Okay, good.
And hell, even Trump is saying it. You know, I mean, Trump is going to, I don't know if you know this, but I mean, he's going to some of the rallies and he's like, hey, this is what I told you was going to happen. I mean, there's recordings floating around, you know, where he's saying, you know, if you let this man in the White House, we're going to have, inflation. You know, we're going to have, you know, progressive spending that's going to start hurting the country. He says, so why do you want this? But, you know, I mean, if you're wind the clock, I mean, he was saying this. I'm not saying, you know, not trying to draw a line in the sand, you know, but I mean, by golly, hey, here we are. And the funny thing is like everybody would rather, for the sake of progressivism, would rather just continue running things into the ground, you know. And I just, you know, at what point do you say, hey, this isn't working out, we should try something else? I'm not, you know, I'm not trying to I'm not trying to point fingers at people, but, you know, I mean, this is where we are.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Let me play you something, actually.
Well, you know,
my little forecast. All right, Pianki, quickly, and then I'm going to get to Jim. Pianki, go ahead.
You got illegals, immigrants in this country, send money back home. Their people take that money and build manufacturing factories to produce goods that they sell to the United States.
How about
that? That's kind of backwards, isn't it?
Anything to hurt the United States. Derek?
It is pretty baffling, you know, and I mean, that's actually, funnily enough, been an argument on why we should have a digital currency, because they can track it and they can see what's happening with it, you know, and you know, that also crosses into privacy issues, you know, so like, you know, now they're tracking what you're spending because they can they have a digital trail. So yeah, I mean, it's hurting where we are, but there's kind of no way to stop it.
I would track money leaving the country, but I don't think it's certainly not constitutional, at least I hope not, to track money in the country. Let me play something real quick that I made before the election, just talking about prophecies. And then I haven't listened to a Trump rally for a while, but as soon as he gets the next one, I'll do that. Anyway, right back in a bit.
Joe Biden's dark winter. No freedom, no liberty, no guns, no representation, no oil, no coal, no nuclear power. No Space Force, no Constitution, no family gatherings, no vacations, just taxes, work, misery, masks, lockdowns, and ever more government. This is what will happen if you let Marxists steal the election. This has been a public service announcement of Action Radio, reminding you it's time to get off your butt and save your country.
And that was before the election I made that. On that note, because I think Derek's probably going to have to go in a minute. Jim, do you have you want to get into the economics for a second, and then we'll get into our gun chat?
No, I think that you guys are covering it very well and pretty completely.
Oh, okay. Just in the interest of time, I want to make sure that Jim has time for a report. Derek, that was a fascinating discussion. I appreciate it. I'm sure we're going to pick this up next week in the same way. But let's get our gun theme, and I'll be right back.
Out of the forests of Virginia to the swamps of southern Florida comes a great man who carries a big gun, probably a Desert Eagle 50 caliber. He served our nation in the military. He protected the citizenry in law enforcement. And now he is a director of Florida Carry, trying to make the Second Amendment as written a reality for all Americans. He is Jim Dice with the Second Amendment Report for Action Radio.
Hey, Florida Carry's in the news. I saw your posting on our Action Radio gun group, so feel free. Blow your horn.
So Florida Carry was named yesterday as the Citizens Committee for the Right to Keep and Bear Arms, which is a national gun rights organization, their affiliate of the year. So my hat's off to all of the folks who have been putting in hard work within Florida Carry, because we really appreciate everything that they've done to help us get there.
Let's give them a round of applause. And because I'm in a good mood, let's give them a gong. See, I got buttons. I'm not afraid to use them. Okay. So what do you guys do for that? What prompted the award? Any special accomplishments?
No, they kind of take a holistic look, so it's mostly based upon the lobbying that we do in Tallahassee and some of the court cases that we've brought and won.
Oh, yeah, you guys do great work. I'm not trying to take away from that. I was just curious what happened. I still want open carry, though.
There was
when
no
are we getting open carry? Sorry, go ahead.
What was that?
I said, when are we getting open carry?
We'll see. I'll be very, very cautiously optimistic that maybe we'll get it sometime soon.
Yeah, I hope so. Okay. Jack, if you have to leave, just if you want to give one more time your information, then we'll get on to Jim, just in case. That way we don't skip it. And then we got questions. Is he still there? He's probably listening. He's probably muted. Anyway, it's early in the podcast, or when you get your podcast, you can catch his information. All right, let's get on to Jim then. So we got some court cases. We got some news. We got some stuff's happening. So I leave it to you, sir. Where should we go first?
So there is some stuff happening. The first one that I want to talk about just because I haven't had the opportunity to talk about it at all since it occurred, were the oral arguments in the New York rifle and pistol case at the Supreme Court. And for anyone who's been following that, the oral arguments went extremely well for proponents of the Second Amendment and about as poorly as they could have gone for anti-gun supporters.
Is there a recording of that? Is there?
There is. If you go to the Supreme Court's website, you can go back and you can either listen to a recording of it or you can read the transcript. So.
Now, I like recordings because I like the inflections in their voice, because you read the words, that's one thing. But when you actually get to hear, you know, whether they're angry, whether they're curious, whether they're amused, you know, there's so much that goes on. And that's what the beauty of oral arguments, I think, is that you get all those things. And if it's recorded, is it a video or is it just the voice recording?
No, it's just audio.
Okay, well, that's still good. All right. Yeah. Okay. If you find it fast enough, feel free to post it on the Action Radio.
Okay. Yeah. I can do that pretty easily because I actually go in and at least start to read almost all of the oral arguments. And once I get three or four pages in, I decide if it's a case that's really interesting to me or if it's some really esoteric point that I really don't care about, and then decide if I'm going to finish.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. Because some of the cases are just downright boring. This is why, you know, although I'd love to be the first, you know, Supreme Court justice who's not a lawyer in over 100 years, I think there are certain cases that just bore me to tears. That's why I don't want to run for office. If you listen to all the crap you have to listen to as a member of Congress, to fundraising, your actual time legislating, I don't even know if they get time to legislate anymore, but there's just so many horrendous other things you have to do. I'd rather, you know, concentrate fully here, which makes it much more interesting. Did you hear any particular, like, really good, you know, arguments in favor and do you have like one example? I don't have to go through the whole thing, but and like a really bad example where the government completely screwed up their arguments, where it's just not holding any water at all.
I guess one that comes to mind right off the bat is the state of New York tried to argue that New York should be allowed to keep this scheme in place because there's vast differences between, you know, rural New York and New York City. And so they should be able to tightly restrict who can carry a firearm in New York City and make it easier in rural New York. And I think it was Justice who replied back, but I can't remember which one. I'd have to go back and read it. But one of the justices replied back that that was a counterintuitive argument because you are much more likely to need the firearm to defend yourself in a place like New York City. And I think the thing that he said is, you know, the odds of getting mugged on a back road dirt trail in rural New York are significantly lower than they would be in downtown New York City.
That's hysterical. You know, and this is why the Supreme Court is so interesting, because, you know, you miss, and this is why I wish those things, well, I guess the oral arguments could be done because you're not going to influence the judges at that point other than who's arguing. But it would be fascinating I mean, do they have live coverage? I mean, do they have videos of this? Because the arguments for the Supreme Court are fascinating. And the things that they say.
They do not do videos of the U.S. Supreme Court.
Too bad.
Some of the state appellate courts and Supreme Courts do that, but the U.S. Supreme Court only provides audio.
Too bad. I want to see their faces. Yeah, I want to see who's asleep. I want to see who's listening. you know, me, I want to get the whole thing just because, yeah. But they do. Scalia was famous for his pithy, witty, you know, comments and just destroyed lawyers, you know, with like a simple question.
Right.
Because go ahead. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I was just going to say that as much as I really think that Mr. Clement did an outstanding job, and I think anyone who listened to that, no matter which side of the argument you're on, probably walked away realizing that the Supreme Court is going to rule against the state of New York. And the only question is now, how far are they going to go?
That's interesting.
But there are three areas where I wish that Mr. Clement would have either argued something differently or not conceded points that he conceded. So the first one is they started talking about sensitive places where the Second Amendment can be restricted. And he started walking through various criterias and schemes of places that he think might possibly could be a sensitive place. And the liberal justices were trying to bring in as many of those places that to get him to concede that they might be sensitive places. And I wish he would not have gone down that path. I think a better answer for him would be if you're going to look at sensitive places where you can restrict someone's Second Amendment right, you should probably start by looking at places that are so sensitive that you surrender your Fourth Amendment rights. So
that wasn't due process or what?
Well, no, like, so for example, search and seizure. So if you are in a jail, for example, you don't have your Fourth Amendment rights against search and seizure. Okay, I will concede that in a jail, you probably should lose your Second Amendment rights as well.
I would think so, yeah. So, and also you're voting and your right to a bunch of different things. I mean, that's the whole point of being in jail. But the thing is, once you're in jail, you know, unless there's some huge travesty of justice, and a lot of those are being corrected now, which is good, but you've been through due process. And the Constitution clearly says you can, let's look at the Fourth Amendment right here, the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, arms, and effects. Oh, I'm sorry, I added the word arms. I just want it there. Anyway, against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no one shall issue but upon probable cause supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly ascribing the places to be searched and the persons or things to be seized, unless you're, you know, a Democrat and you want to search people for January 6th. Oh, I'm sorry, that's not in there either. But anyway, yeah.
Well, and my
process applies. Yeah.
Well, mine was more so people who are not prisoners. So visitors who enter a jail don't have Fourth Amendment rights against search and seizure either. Mm-hmm. So if you go to visit someone in a jail, you can be searched. They can search you without a warrant. It's a sensitive place, and the courts have determined that you do not have your Fourth Amendment rights against unreasonable search and seizure when you enter a jail.
Yeah.
Okay.
The problem,
then you, I'm okay with not letting people carry firearms in a jail. It's a sensitive place. But I don't think you should have the myriad of places that the liberals would try to make sensitive places. You know, there was some talk from some of the liberal justices that they thought it might be okay to name all of New York City a sensitive place.
Well, see, you know where that's going to go. So the whole concept should be tossed out. And here's – there's a perception thing that the left has been very good about in planting in people's minds. And it's not the carrying of guns. What they're really talking about is the criminal use of guns. And so, in other words, they would say, well, why would you let a gun in a hospital? Because, you know, well, why not? You know, if you're carrying concealed. You know, well, someone might do something criminal. Well, they might do something criminal with all kinds of things. They might cut the IV lines. I mean, you know, there's an infinite variety of criminal things people can do, you know, with a scalpel, for example, you know. So that doesn't apply. But they said, well, how about church? Well, why would you want to carry in church? That's God's house. How can you, you know, carry a gun in church? Well, to protect the parishioners from, you know, some of the horrible things that have happened. But what they're really saying is that all people who carry guns are criminals or likely to commit criminal action. So in order to prevent that, we can't have guns at all. That's what they're really saying. And this is why it's a mistake to go through this sensitive areas thing, because that's what they're saying. But if you talk about a normal person, a normal law-abiding concealed carry holder, you know, whether they have a permit or not, these folks are by every statistic, every measure, every metric, as they say, far more law-abiding than the police. You know, individually, these are some of the most law-abiding people in the country are those that carry a firearm, regular citizens. And so I would think that would at least be used, but you still don't have to justify your right. You know, a right that's valid in the country is valid in the city. The other distinction, go ahead. And then I have another comment for you.
No, I agree. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, the other one is this ridiculous situation. I don't know if the government argued this, the difference between the Second Amendment in your home and the Second Amendment outside your home. I mean, I'm sorry, but my front door does not define my Second Amendment. You know, it's just as valid outside the home as it is inside the home. Okay, the front door is not a barrier to your Second Amendment, and yet they've made this distinction for years. Well, I think the Heller case in Washington. Well, you don't have the right to carry outside because that's public property. You know, you only have the right to carry inside your home. What's the purpose of carrying inside your home? You know, I mean, if you want to, you can. But the idea that your Second Amendment ends at your front door, did that come up at all in the case or no?
It did a little bit. because that really is kind of the fundamental question that's being answered in this case is, do you actually have the right to carry freely wherever you would like? And that's kind of why they got into the whole sensitive places discussion, because some of the liberal justices started going down the path of the parade of horribles of places where people were going to be carrying firearms. But that's
criminal. That's right. The point. It only is a problem if a criminal action is done, and criminal actions can be done anywhere. That's how I'd fight that argument.
Yeah, and the problem you run into is in the Heller decision, Justice Scalia, I think to get Kennedy on board, actually named places where restrictions on the possession of firearms would most likely be a legal and constitutional restriction.
Yeah, see, that has to be changed.
And he named things like schools and a few other things. So so right now, it's hard to argue that at the Supreme Court, because there's a binding Supreme Court decision that says that there are some sensitive places. It doesn't list all of them.
They can
change it. The Supreme Court could do that. But yeah. I think you're in a losing position if you're trying to win a case like this and you go in trying to tell the court that the seminal Second Amendment case was wrongly decided when you're trying to make a completely different point. You know, that's a good argument for another case another day. But I think you really muddy the water on this case if you do that. So the second place that I thought that Clement made a mistake is Justice Gorsuch asked what the appropriate level of scrutiny did Mr. Clement think you should have in Second Amendment cases. And he immediately went down the path of the history and tradition test, which basically looks at how historically the Second Amendment or whatever right you're talking about had been treated, especially around the time of the passage of the Bill of Rights and around the time of the passage of the 14th Amendment, since that's when it was incorporated. And I think that's a really bad thing to do, because you can see even in this case that anti-gunners will go back and pick and choose historical laws that will prove whatever anti-constitutional restriction they're trying to put in place and show that they existed somewhere. And I think you're opening the door for liberal judges to go in and interpret history and tradition however they deem fit. And so I don't like that he went down that path. Fortunately, a little later on, Justice Kavanaugh kind of led Mr. Clement back to strict scrutiny and said that.
Oh, that's good.
That was probably, asked him if he didn't think that was probably more appropriate, as that's how we treat other fundamental constitutional rights. So
yeah,
I wish that Clement would have immediately gone to strict scrutiny rather than going down the history and tradition, because I think that's a really bad way to start going, especially with the way liberal judges are now.
Yeah. And so, and Jim and I have these discussions all the time. I'm a well-known constitutional absolutist. In other words, the right is absolute within the context of the right. So in other words, you can't, you know, if it says that people have the right to keep, you know, the right of people to keep and bear arms cannot be infringed, it means it cannot be infringed, period. You know, and all these other things, these compelling state. Oh, hold on, let me just finish this. I'll get to you. And I got another call. It looks like we have joining us. Yeah. This idea of a compelling state interest or reasonable restrictions or any of these things that or sensitive places, as we're talking about now, none of that stuff applies, because the whole point of a right is that the right is absolute within the context of the right. And the context of the Second Amendment is owning and carrying. It's not using. It's not engaging in criminal activity. None of that stuff applies. But the idea of owning and carrying is absolute. And so any of these compelling state interest, reasonable restrictions, to me, are unconstitutional. I don't know if you can argue that successfully in court, because the court likes to go on their traditions and their precedents and things like that. They don't go strictly by the Constitution. And that's one of the failings of the Supreme Court. Anyway, Pianki, go ahead.
On the issue of using deadly force to protect property.
Mm-hmm.
During the LA riots, Koreans used deadly force to protect their property. And we all had heard of cattle rustlers being shot trying to steal cattle. So what's your opinion?
So the opinion that I would have is I tend to agree more with Florida law, which does not allow you to use deadly force to protect property. It allows you to use force. It does not allow you to use deadly force. And there are, I think, still a couple of states that do allow you to use deadly force to protect property. But those are fairly few. I don't know that I would have to think about it, but my going in position would be that I don't think you should change a law and allow deadly force to be used to protect property.
You know, it's interesting. There was an argument Mark Levin presented that property, you know, I said, well, why would you shoot someone for stealing a TV? You know, well, first of all, that person's probably in your house, and that presents a life-threatening situation automatically anyway. But the other thing is, what did it take to get that TV? It took work. It took time. That took time out of your life to do that. And so the idea that property is not part of your life, and I'm not saying you should kill people over TV, but what I'm saying is we need to really start thinking in terms of what is it about your life, time, part of your life. If you work hard, you know, and a bunch of home invaders steal everything you've got, they've stolen your property, but they've also stolen a big part of your life because it's going to take more of your life to replace those things. So in other words, if you can't, you know, shoot someone for stealing your car, can you shoot the tires out? In other words, you're not using deadly force, but you're doing something that might hopefully stop them from stealing your car. So in other words, where does that kind of line come? And then I'm going to bring Chappies on the line. We'll bring him in the conversation here in a second. But, you know, property is life in a sense. Now, I'm not saying you should, you know, like I say, kill over the TV unless the person's trying to throw the TV at you on your way out the door or their way out the door. I mean, there are always these exceptions here. But the thing is, property is life. I mean, it really is. Jim?
Yeah, first of all, I would say with the shooting tires out, in most states, when you discharge a firearm, you have used deadly force, whether you're shooting it at the person or near the person. That's considered deadly force. I have a problem with allowing deadly force to be used for the taking of property. Now, mm-hmm. if someone breaks into your home and you are in there, I think that, again, Florida law is probably a good measure of what you should be able to do. In Florida, if someone breaks into your home and you are there, you can assume that they mean to cause death or great bodily harm to you, and you can use deadly force.
Yeah. Even if they say they're just stealing your TV.
Yeah, it doesn't matter what they say. The moment they break into your home, you can presume that they mean to do death or great bodily harm, and then it becomes incumbent upon the person charging you to prove that they did something to show that they weren't. So, you know, if somebody is obviously drunk and staggers in your front door and mm-hmm. falls down on the floor, you're going to have a hard time convincing a jury that they actually meant to cause you death or great bodily harm. Or if someone who's your neighbor, you know, comes running in and says, hey, I heard someone screaming over here. Is everyone okay? You're going to have a hard time proving that they meant to cause death or great bodily harm. But for the most part, if somebody enters your home without your permission, you can make that assumption.
What if they're only stealing your car from your driveway? They're not in your home, but they're stealing your car.
Then, yeah, that's, again, a protecting of property rather than...
Interesting.
And you can use force to stop them. You just can't use deadly force.
Interesting. Okay. See, and I would, you know, you throw a baseball bat at the window or something like that. Yeah. And I'm not saying people should be shot over property, but what I'm saying is that property is life, that there are some considerations, and we need to think about that a bit more. Pianki, do you have another thing? And what I'm pro- probably going to have to do, because I didn't do it earlier, is play our 10 Rows of Volunteers piece and our spot for Eric, our webmaster. So I need to do that. I should have done that earlier before Derek came on, but I goofed. So we're going to have to sort of take a couple minutes here and do that. Well, actually about 6-7 minutes. So it's going to cut into everybody's report, and I really apologize for that. Chappie, if you want to come back next week and do more stuff, we'll do that. But I'm going to sort of abbreviate here. Jim, do you have anything further on this? I know we're cutting it short a little bit.
Well, I guess I'll probably be going to jail then.
Well, Missouri, can you use deadly force to protect property?
Well, I have never researched any cases on it, and right off the top of my head, I don't know. But, you know, I don't know how else you would stop somebody from stealing your car. A little old lady is not going to run out and use some mixed martial arts tactics on somebody's stealing their car. They may get shot themselves. So
that goes to the Kyle Rittenhouse thing of this whole idea of self-defense. We may even want to talk about that. I'll tell you what, I'm going to play an abbreviated Santa Rosa Volunteers and a quick commercial, be about 3 minutes. And so, Jim, do you have to go soon or can you hang around for a little bit?
No, I'm going to have to jump off, but
okay, so this
I'm sure you guys will handle this very well.
Well, thank you. A great briefing on the court case. And that, you know, I'm glad you do such you know, wonderful research. And let's get some of the more Florida Carry people on too. So let's tell folks how to reach you in Florida Carry, and then I shall play a couple things.
Sure. You can reach Florida Carry on the web at www.floridacarry.org. And you can reach me directly by email at jim@floridacarry.org.
Sounds good. All right. So we're right back with Donnie Chapman, known as Chappie, and we'll talk gun tech competitions and things like that. Thanks, Jim. Talk to you next week.
Thanks.
This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio. I am proud to announce a new feature of Action Radio. Santa Rosa Volunteers has commissioned me to bring to you an education in our founding documents, one focused subject at a time. Each week, we will have a new presentation drawing from the Declaration of Independence, the Federalist Papers, the Constitution, and who knows, maybe back to Magna Carta. So enjoy learning about your God-given birthright in these vignettes. Share them with your children, your grandchildren, your parents, your friends, in fact, anyone you want to serve, an accessible yet poignant introduction to a lifelong journey in the study and practice of liberty. The whole purpose of these presentations is to inform a generation or two of Americans about the true meaning of our founding. They should have gotten that in school. Since that is not happening, Santa Rosa Volunteers has decided to help change that. If you want to learn more about Santa Rosa Volunteers and maybe get involved, their website is srv1776.com. srv1776.com. Their email is srv1776@protonmail.com. It is their goal to share local community information while encouraging everyone to feel welcomed and informed. Santa Rosa Volunteers says, "Arise, patriots! It is time to take our republic back. The sleeping giant awakens. Arise, patriots, and get involved." Until next time, this is Greg Penglis for Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with a personal recommendation and testimonial for Eric Colley, our new webmaster and marketing guru. Eric has been invaluable in upgrading our website, writeyourlaws.com. To help you with your marketing, Eric Colley offers proven, cost-effective strategies to help small businesses, startups, and nonprofits market themselves on Google Page One. You can gain thousands of followers and be far more competitive, and this is the good part, without paid advertising. Most business owners don't have the time or expertise to excel at marketing. Even fewer have the funds to hire a special employee. And you don't have to. There is a better option. Eric Colley, a consultant who uses leading-edge marketing strategies to increase your profitability at costs which are far more affordable than an advertising or marketing agency. You can be seen high up in Google's Page One.
you can dominate Google's local three-pack of businesses next to the search results map. You can increase foot and website traffic. Eric Colley can be reached at 208-999-7510. That's 208-999-7510. His website is besmallbusiness.com. BESMALLBUSINESS. And you can reach him by email at eric@besmallbusiness.com. And that's how you do it.
All right, so I'm going to have to be better at planning my time next week. I think between Alan, we're going to have Shirley Wattrall is going to be joining us sometime in December at 7 o'clock. So Fridays are going to be, you know, pure guests, pure reporters. We're going to have Alan Dawson from Belize. We're going to have Shirley Wattrall about DC Project Women and Guns. We're going to have Derek Park Financial, Jim Dykes on Second Amendment, and Chappie on gun tech competitions and everything else. I really like Fridays. Fridays are fun around here. Good morning, Chappie.
Morning.
All right. So what's going on? What's happening in gun world, gun tech, gun competitions? What do you got for us?
Well, in the local area at that Holt, at Element Training Group, hosted by RPGI, is the big level 2 steel challenge match that we're having here. Today we are shooting this afternoon as staff, and Saturday and Sunday will be the match itself. We're going to have a lot of big shooters coming into the local area. So if anybody wants to shoot it, or if they want to come watch, they can go out to Element Training Group out in Holt, Florida, and come check out a Level 2 Steel Challenge match.
Where's
one of our
Element,
local...
Is that the name of the range, Element Training Group, or what's that?
Mm-hmm. It's the Element Training Group. It's in Holt, Florida. It's off of 90, Highway 90.
Okay.
A huge facility. Actually, one of our local very own Grandmaster, who also shoots for Chappie Tactical, is competing this weekend.
Wow. Who's that?
Gatlin Johnson, and I'm actually going to bring him on the show in 2 weeks, and we're going to do an interview, talk to him about how he got into competition shooting, types of competition shooting, and what else, what's he recommend for people to start, and stuff like that.
Okay. Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, we talk about competitions because it's, you know, people are wondering, what are we talking about competitions? Well, if you really want to learn about your firearm, if you really want to learn about your capability, if you want to increase it, you know, competition doesn't mean we're not trying to make, you know, major world-class athletes here. But the thing is, I can't think of a better way that I improved my personal skills except through competition. The person I was competing against was me. You know, I wasn't there to try and be the fastest time or the, you know, a lot of people do, and they're really good at it. I don't think I'll ever be at that level. But the thing is, it was just fun. It was fun for me to compete against me. It was fun for me to see what I could do. You know, and it's so much more fun than just shooting in paper targets, you know, calmly, which is okay. I mean, it's a nice activity. But the thing is, when you get to hit steel, you knock stuff down. You know, it's immediate feedback. It's got that great pinging noise, you know, especially when you have a whole rack of steel plates and you go ping, 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 ping. Well, maybe not that fast. I'm not that good. But you know, but the point is, it's a lot more fun to do that. And you build your skills and you go, oh, that's how you use a gun, you know. And it's such a fascinating thing, I think. And this is why, you know, obviously, I'm talking myself into getting back into it, which I will pretty, you know, soon, hopefully early next year. But yeah, that's why this is important. That's why this is such a great thing to do is to actually get out and compete. And even if people never compete, but just take a competition lesson, just the skills of using a holster, of drawing, of the safety rules that go into it and everything else is good. But quite honestly, it's fun to be around other shooters. It's a kick. You have people there that everybody's willing to help you. I mean, it's the most helpful competitive environment I think I've ever seen. And so it's really kind of nice. Anyway. That's my plug for it.
Absolutely. And then the other great thing, you know, I always talked about before, but it induces that stress that you're not going to get shooting at paper. And you're also going to, like you said, learn your firearm. You're going to learn the clear malfunctions under stress while you're under the clock, while everybody's watching you. So that's the other great thing about it. So
Well, you also find if your gun works. You know, if you get one of these complex guns with all that extra technology and super slick this, and you've completely removed all the parts that the engineer spent years developing, you put your own, you know, put all the aftermarket stuff in, and it doesn't work, you go, oh, that's interesting, and I paid all this extra money. Sometimes it's better just to leave the guns the way you buy them, you know, I think. Anyway,
sometimes,
go ahead. What were you gonna say?
Sometimes it's better. Oh, yeah. And then also coming for this competition is another big person in the Steel Challenge community is Steve Foster. So he will be here this weekend. So if anybody wants to see Steve Foster and Gatling Johnson go head-to-head this weekend for the title, you'll see some fast shooting this weekend if they'd like to come out. So.
Well, how good are they? How fast are they? What are we talking about here? What can they do?
Five targets under 2 seconds.
Oh, Jesus.
So, yeah. These are typically 8-inch plates. So.
Right. How far apart? How far away are they and how far apart?
Depending on which stage, up to 25 yards. And then depending on how the plates, maybe a couple feet away from each other, but. You know, you got to make sure that you don't hit one plate and hit the stop plate. If you hit the stop plate first or in between before you're supposed to hit it, it stops the time.
Oh, the stop. Is that in the middle of the plates? If I remember this, I forgot about that.
It depends. It depends on the stage. So there's eight stages that they use.
Okay.
And depending on the stage, some of them are behind, some's in the middle, some's to the side. It's all different. But if you go to a steel match here versus a steel match, a sanctioned steel match to another state, it's all the same. So you know that. And what a lot of guys do is practice the stages, kind of like walking the golf course the day before. They'll practice the stages that they're having difficulties with. Or some guys even download and study it. Hey, I'm going to shoot this one first. Like they have it down to a science.
Yeah.
Just to take off, you know, milliseconds off, and it's quite amazing. Even tuning their ammo, their firearm, it's fast. It's super fast, and especially ROing it, which the stage I will be ROing this weekend.
Is that range officer? Okay, you got to find out your acronyms. We're new at this.
Yes, sure. So being the range officer for the stage Smoke and Hope. So these are. Four targets and then get the one steel plate. The steel plate is the 8-inch square, but or round plate. But the four other plates are these huge square plates. So everybody thinks, hey, I'm going to go super fast, but it's amazing. You can't miss on those, but that's one of the faster stages because people will just drive their guns so fast because it is a bigger target than hit that stop plate. It's quite amazing. So,
Hey, Gene, you want to knock down some steel? You think that would get you interested in competition?
Yeah, sounds interesting.
Yeah.
So, what you guys also, since you're in the local area, on the second Saturday of the month at Escambia River Gun Club is our Steel Challenge matches, and they're sanctioned level one matches. So it's a great way to start. And like you mentioned too, everybody is super friendly, and everybody will do whatever it takes to make sure you can compete. So you guys need to definitely come out.
Yeah, we used to have a range in San Leandro, and it wasn't a big formal range, but it was like Saturday nights, people would gather, and it was mostly steel plate, and so usually we're matched with another shooter, and it was fairly simple stuff, but the steel plate was always the most fun for me, because they had a string you kind of pull it to set them back up, so it was very easy, there wasn't a lot to do, and they had proper targets and other things, and kind of set them up, but it's really fun to shoot physical targets. And I would do this revolver. So there'd be six. And ideally I'd hit all six. Otherwise I'd have to reload. But that was really embarrassing if I couldn't hit all six. But, going the faster you go, the faster you miss. And so there's a real talent. I've seen these guys. It's like boom, 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 boom. It's like, how do they do that? And they'll see, falls down. And it's like, but they're practicing. Is this like a full-time job for them, for the serious competitors? I mean, this is what they do. How's it work?
Majority. So Gatlin Johnson's in the Air Force Reserves. Steve Foster, I believe, has a job as well. Most of these guys have jobs, but this is also they dedicate the rest of their time into this. But you did, I know you did mention night shooting, and we were talking about self-defense and everything. So a lot of people, like you said, practice what you would have never really got to shoot at night or with using their light, because you'll see everybody have like these elaborate lights on their firearms. But most ranges aren't open at night. Well, this weekend at Element, we are doing a side outlaw match in the evening, Saturday evening, with the Steel Challenge targets with lights or night vision goggles. It'll be completely black. As soon as the timer goes on,
You turn your light on your firearm and shoot the targets, or you can be on the squad that has the night vision goggles, completely blacked out, and shoot your targets. Then that way people can kind of – there is, you know, a little bit of difference with the shadows and you know, your depth perception using different light and night vision goggles. So that's a great way to train for an intruder or anything else at night that a lot of people will never get to do. But now is a chance to train with that way. So, and it's interesting, too, because it's –
really important. In fact, it would be nice to have IDPA, International Defensive Pistol Association, do night or low vision things. And our place was pretty well lit. So it was like it was almost like daytime. I mean, it was they had enough floodlights at night, so it didn't make a difference. But the ability to train in a low-light situation, because if you're at home at night, it's going to be a low-light situation. And the flash, you know, if you, especially if you have overloads, if you've got a really powerful load and you're a very short barrel revolver, it's going to be a whole lot of flash. You're going to be blinded by that, you know, temporarily, and people don't realize some of these effects. So the ability to shoot low level or low light, I think would be fascinating to try. I'd like to try it.
IDPA, it's been a few years since I've seen it. Some matches, it's more the indoor matches. They'll do like a low light course where you'll have to draw, shoot, and then use your flashlight that's not mounted on your gun to kind of do kind of the flash, which, you know, it's a good training environment too. And it is different. And the thing is, with shooting at night, especially here in Florida, the humidity, people don't realize the smoke coming from the barrel, it blinds you as well. So,
oh, really?
So there you have to learn, is that a target? Is it, you know, is that a threat? Not a threat? Can I see them? So, again, these competitions, especially these night competitions, are a great way to train with your firearm, with your light, under these conditions. How are you going to react? How does your gun react? At night too, like I said, with the smoke and everything else. So it's a great way. Everybody should come out this Saturday. If not, just to watch, just to see, like you're talking about, maybe somebody else has a firearm just like them and see the flash from the muzzle and how much it throws out like a dragon's breath, you know. So.
And to me, that's just wasted powder. If you got a flash, you're wasting your powder.
Yeah.
You got two powerful around for too little a gun, you know. So it's how's that working with the tech, especially maybe whether either American or European ammo manufacturers? Are they working on lower flash? You know, I know they have like subsonic ammunition, which is great for close. And it's not so good for 50-yard targets, which I like to shoot, or even 100 yards with a handgun, which is kind of unusual, but that's me. But are you know, new powders, new formulas, are they working on lower flash and lower noise, for example? Anything coming out with that in ammo?
It depends on the grain, on the primer. Most big manufacturers, because, again, those ammos are tuned to certain people's gun, they're just doing across-the-board stuff. Now, of course, certain ammo manufacturers might have, like, a brand of their defensive ammo that might shoot softer, that might have less powder burn, like you said. But, you know, of course, you're going to pay for that. There are some companies that are doing it, but it's kind of a specialized product versus just going to a store and buying 115 grain 9mm off the shelf. It's definitely going to be a hotter round.
Yeah.
But
you know, it's interesting because that's one of my big fears, concerns. If I ever have to defend my life, I might lose my hearing in the process because guns are loud at the range. I use foam earplugs and a headset over it. So the noise impact is minimal. You know, of course, I try to avoid excess noise, even though I play rock and roll guitar too. But I try to keep that below the threshold where it's going to hurt me too, even though it's fun. But for those of us that like loud things, you know, airplanes, guns, and rock and roll, you know, there's a noise problem. But we actually have a bill here. We wrote it, Anthony Nunez, when he was on the show. He's a PhD electrical engineering candidate, so he got a little too busy to continue. But he was also in Florida Carry. And was advocating, you know, campus carry and things like that. But he and I came up with a bill, and he brought some other sources in it that actually would allow for, you know, suppressors and ways to save your hearing. There's no reason, and we haven't talked about this yet, but there's no reason that people should have to go deaf just to save their life. That guns are simply too loud. That the idea that regular people can't have a suppressor for in-home use so that they can, you know, defend themselves, not be afraid of losing their hearing, you know, just to save their life. Has there been any movement on that? And if not, it's something I'd like to start, you know, in Florida here and with Florida Carry maybe too, do some kind of, you know, coalition of folks to remove this ridiculous idea that guns have to be deafeningly loud. What do you think?
I haven't heard anything in a while. I know President Trump's son was pushing the Hearing Conservation Act, and it kind of stopped dead in the water. But I agree. I think it should be pushed because, people are going to go deaf. Another aspect I think would be good about it, too, is let's say you have a suppressor. You call 911 and say, hey, I'm defending myself. Mm-hmm. I have a suppressed firearm. So when law enforcement or SWAT comes in and they start hearing live gunfire, they know, okay, you're suppressed. The intruder's not. That gunfire is coming over there. That's where the intruder's at versus a lower. So, but yeah,
are there cases
I agree, you need to be pushed.
Have criminals picked up suppressors for their criminal use?
They have it legally.
I know that, obviously, but I'm wondering if there are cases that
you always see it in the movies. In reality, I really doubt it. Because, then they're going to have to get a barrel that they can put the muzzle, put the suppressor on. So in reality, probably not. Like I said, you always see it in the movies, but in reality, it's probably not happening. So
spy films, James Bond had a suppressor.
Exactly. Yeah. And then plus, they don't make a little sound like they do in the movie. You hear a little snap, but they don't completely silence it.
Oh no, it's still. Well, can it still damage your hearing, or is it at a threshold level where it's so loud? It's not that loud.
What I shot at that threshold level. It's definitely a threshold level. So, and especially if you're shooting like a 22 suppressed with CCI quiet, I think a BB gun's louder, really. So.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay, but a standard like 9mm defensive round with a suppressed handgun.
It's a suppressed handgun. It's doable without hearing protection, I think. So it's not
interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
I'd be curious. Yeah.
But yeah, that I believe that law definitely, that bill needs to be pushed. Push it as long as we can get the backing of some medical providers and other professionals. I think that could be key because that definitely does need to be pushed. Like you said, now you're going to be deaf protecting yourself, and now you hear law enforcement come in and they're trying to give you directions, but you're deaf.
You
might
can't hear
you
it,
out of the threat because you can't hear them telling you to get on the ground.
Yeah.
So yeah,
that's a really good point. Well, let me send you the bill. And then, of course, I'm hoping to form kind of like a coalition, our own little gun lobby here in Santa Rosa County. With you and some other folks, and I'm not going to mention them until we, get them on board. But I think that we could do a lot here. I still want to make this the freest county in the country and have some model legislation. And one of them could that be done with a county ordinance, or would that have to be a state law? The suppressors were okay for home use or something.
It's going to have to be state and still federal because you're still going to have until Florida makes it where kind of like Texas. Right now, Texas has a law where I believe if you purchase one that's manufactured in Texas, you don't need a tax stamp, I believe. Since it's still federal and everything with the ATF, the state's going to have to do something about it because now to get a suppressor, you still have to go through the ATF, do the fingerprints and go through and have it form 4 and all this other stuff versus like how Texas is doing it. Like I said, we're probably because a lot of their a lot of the suppressor companies are in Texas, so they're making, if you buy it there, you don't have to go through all this red tape.
Well, that's interesting.
Right now, Florida, you have to go through this red tape of going through the ATF, getting the more in-depth background check, and then it's just a money thing. And then you're waiting. I think the fastest I've done one on a customer now is probably 9 months before they got their tax stamp back. And that's fast for these times right now.
Yeah.
So it was actually moving a lot faster when everybody was working at home right after COVID because all the IOs are bored, so they were just processing tax stamps at home. So
interesting.
But
okay.
Yeah.
Well, we got about 7 minutes left here. Anything that that we should be talking about? Of course, my next question is has COVID affected the ranges and the ability of folks to go out there? I mean, you're not wearing masks, under your headsets and goggles, are you? Or are you?
Yeah,
You are?
No, I don't think it hasn't affected anything in Florida. Of course, during the initial shutdown, it did. And then, you know, thank God we have Governor DeSantis saying, you know, hey, ranges won't be closed. Go out, buy new stuff, especially, you know, like at Scambia River Gun Club, you're outside. So you're not right up on each other. So it hasn't, you know, of course, just do the standard precautions, wash your hands, and don't shake hands if you feel scared or anything. But I don't think it has. I think actually it's right now, especially at our range, it brought more people out because people were tired of being inside and people just want that normal life. And plus, again, we're outside, so you get to do outside things. And matches here, I think, have been unrestricted. I've heard of some places up north, you know, of course, blue states, where they're wearing a mask while shooting competitions, which I could not imagine doing. And whereas here, you know,
well,
shooting matches like it's normal.
You're breathing heavier, folks. You know, why would you want to wear a mask? I mean, it's oxygen depletion. You know, they should get a handicap or like have a set score. Give them like a couple of second bonus for being dumb enough to be in a place where they have to wear masks. Wow, that's wild.
Yeah, I think I have worry more about lead exposure than I think COVID exposure. So
yeah,
but yeah, wearing the mask is just, I couldn't imagine, especially when it's hot out and. Yeah, there's no way. But, yeah, here, I don't think COVID has affected anything. The only thing that maybe has affected anything is the numbers in competitive shooters is just because of the ammo shortage and the price. But
I was just going to ask you about that. Can people buy ammo? Is it prohibitively expensive? What's going on with that?
Well, I think, okay, for Steel Challenge, it was kind of weird. The trend was a lot of people were shooting pistol caliber carbine, so 9mm, where they're shooting their pistol 9mm. Well, in Steel Challenge, they also have the rimfire division. And it kind of seems there's two things why I think a lot of people went to rimfire. One, it's faster. Two, it's cheaper for ammo. And a lot more people, I think, have gotten into that because, you know, a lot of people have learned on the 22. So a lot of people, and plus it's easier ammo to find right now and the lower cost than shooting a 9. So in Steel Challenge, it's kind of flipped now more towards the rimfire division. USPSA, the numbers have gone down, but what stage managers have been doing for matches is they've lowered the round count per stage versus having the typical USPSA long stage. It's 32 rounds per stage. A lot of places are doing at least 21 to 24 rounds per stage where there's at least a reload, but they're keeping the round count down. So it's not really hurting their wallet. So, and then plus they want to get people out.
Yeah, that's the other thing too, folks.
So
you go through a lot of ammo, you kill a lot of ammo in a gun.
Yeah, exactly.
But that's what makes it fun.
And of course, people can't get out and practice as much because of the ammo shortage and stuff like that. Because again, it's pretty priced right now. And then you throw in, of course, now gas, you know, to get to the range and throw in all these other things that, you know.
Yeah. Any artificial shortages? Has the government put any restrictions on ammo where it makes it more expensive for no reason, like they are with gasoline, by just cutting the supply?
I have not seen that yet. The only like fishy thing that I've seen, you know, everybody says it's hard to find ammo here and everything else. And then, of course, I'm on the meetings with all these European countries, and, you know, they're saying, oh, we're getting American ammo here every day. But yet we can't find it on our shelves, and they're getting our primers and our ammunition, but yet we can't find it here. And then you hear these ammo companies, oh, we're making, showing videos, we're making stuff, and it's shipping out. Well, who's getting it? Because a lot of people can't find it. So
that's a really good question. That deserves some investigating. Would it be worth buying our own ammo from European companies that got it, you know, bulk? I mean, you know, would it pass to ship it back?
Yeah.
What's that?
Unfortunately, they can't export it back and have to issue. So then in turn, we end up buying their European ammo that we're selling here, and they're selling American ammo over there. So it makes absolutely no sense.
No, it doesn't. That's funny.
I think there's something behind the government and these other ammo manufacturers just because it just doesn't seem right. You know, they're making ammo, but who's getting it?
Well,
if
you want to make that an investigative report, that'd be a great thing to find out, you know, the great ammo, you know, supply. Why is our ammo going to Europe and why is European ammo coming here?
Oh, absolutely.
Why isn't you know, to go for it, just to, you know, make a special report, you know, throw some sources on the Action Radio Gun Group page on Facebook, and let's find out. Yeah. We've only got a couple minutes left. Things, like I said, Fridays are going to be quick. We're going to have to cover a lot of ground in a short time. Anything else we should be covering? And then, of course, tell people how to find you.
That's it. Like I said, this weekend, if they would like to come out and watch a Level 2 Steel Challenge Match or participate, Element Training Group in Holt, Florida, it's off Highway 90. Again, in Holt, Florida. If anybody wants to get a hold of me, I can be reached at facebook.com/ChappieTactical, on Instagram at ChappieTactical. If they want to email me with questions or how to purchase ammo, it's ChappieTactical@gmail.com.
Well, that sounds good. Man, we still have a minute left. Oh, boy. Gene, do you have a question?
Yeah.
Let's see if Gene has a question if you want to get into the gun world beyond just for self-protection.
I don't have a question.
Okay.
Well, I'm going to get you and Gene out to the range.
Actually, I do have one question, though. For kids, what age do you recommend a kid, you know, be able to use a gun?
That's a great question.
I think it all depends on the parent. Now this is Donnie speaking. I think age 5 is the age to start at least getting familiarized, like with a BB gun, and teaching them the fundamentals as far as safety. How, you know, never point a firearm at anybody, finger on the trigger. I 5 with a BB gun, and then 8 to 10 with a .22. Now, that's just my aspect. I think it depends on the family and the parents and all the other stuff. And but as far as handling, I think 8 to 10 under direct supervision, the same thing, age 5 under direct supervision with a BB gun, you know, as far as you're teaching them the safety aspects. That way, when they transition to a firearm, they already have all the safety ingrained in their head. So
yeah, that actually makes a lot of sense. We got about 10 seconds left, but I did that. I took my daughter to the range and on a Ruger 10/22, a 22 rifle, semi-automatic rifle, and she loved it. We had a great time. It was really fun. She was good at it too.
Absolutely.
So and so that way when kids do that, they don't have this sort of fascination of the you know, don't ever, you know, ban your guns from kids and say you know, don't ever let them, you know, if they want to look at them, if they want, you know, of course, under supervision, as we said before, absolutely 100% supervision. But I basically, my daughter with guns, you want to look at the guns? You want to take a look at this here? I want to explain how this works. No, Dad, I've seen it. It's okay. It's fine. I'm done. So now I know she doesn't have
the curiosity out of their head.
Yeah, exactly. So, cause she knows she can look at them anytime with me. So then it doesn't become an issue. So that's something else we can talk about too. Kids and guns, I think, is a great thing for us to chat about. We have
absolutely.
To go. Thanks, Chappie. Let's, we're giving you information. We're good. We're all set. We're out of time. Yeah, that's it. So no show next Thursday and Friday. We're just going to do Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody. And I'll be back Monday morning at 7 Eastern, 6 Central, 5 Mountain, 4 Pacific, and who knows in the rest of the world. Action Radio is at blogtalkradio.com. Thanks, Gene. Action Radio is at blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. And our website for our legislation, www.writeyourlaws.com, at WRITEYOURLAWS. I will see you all Monday.